97.3. No need to change. Keep it tuned to City. You're number one. Don't look no further. We've got it all covered. City FM.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, my neighbor.
Good morning to life.
Good morning.
Music. Talk. Inspiration. In perspective.
Express yourself.
Good morning, my neighbor.
City FM, your station.
It's a refreshing lifestyle.
City FM, 97.3.
Thank you, Jesus. So sing along with us.
Unleashing the power
Mahasafuti.
Of
the Holy Spirit. This is 97.3. You can stand to your feet. Oh, careful. Yeah, 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 oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my, na be, yeah, yeah. Eternity, and God, yeah,
Steve Latte, 26 minutes past 6. One of our favorite songs on this program.
Yes, Lord.
Head of thy church, the savior of our souls, the shepherd of your flock. We trust in you. We believe in your grace. We are kept by your providence, your sustenance. Your mercies endure for 1,000 generations. Start the morning on the wings of a song. Let it be a song of praise. Let it be a song of gratitude. A It's not just about what you get and forget. It's about what you can also give and be grateful for. City Breakfast Show is live. 23rd day of March 2023. So it's 2303-2023. Wonderful numbers.
By the mercy of God, by the mercy of God, the mercy of God.
And there's something you need to deliberately decide to focus on what God has done, on what you have, not on what you don't have. It's a mindset. Because the real battle of your life is the battle for your mind. Everybody's trying to get a piece of your mind. Whether it's the radio, the TV, your children, your spouse, whether it's the newspapers, whether it's the whatever it is, everybody is fighting for your mind. So the battle of life is a battle for your mind. And that battle is really a battle for your focus. Everybody wants you to give them attention. It could be a pain that wants you to give it attention. It could be a need. It could be somebody that's close to you. So the battle for your mind is a battle for focus. And your focus determines your feelings. Your focus determines your performance. Whether you're an individual or a company or a country, what you focus on determines what you become. So guard your focus jealously. Guard your focus jealously. Somebody can be in traffic going to work in a great mood, and then somebody crosses you and then insults you, and then the rest of the day your focus is on that bad driver. Destroys everything about the day. You get so angry and you can't even focus on what you do at work. So it's really a battle for your focus. But you have agency. You can decide what to focus on. Don't allow things that happen around you to determine your focus the rest of the day. And indeed, in business, there's a different strategy. There's the focus strategy. Oh, yes. Some people do their differentiation, but some people do their focus. So the key point this morning, guard your focus diligently. Choose your focus consciously and guard it deliberately. Choose your focus consciously. So there can be rumors flying about you. Don't spend the whole day meditating on those rumors. Focus on what God has done. Focus on how far you've come and the vision is giving you, what you can achieve, the difference you can make. Focus on those who make you happy. Focus on the things that drive you to succeed. Focus on the things that have been assigned to you to change. Not on the bad words of somebody or on the criticisms of many. So this is Business Sense brought to you by ADB. Our focus is to give you a better life. If you need a loan to pay your fees, if you need a loan to build that mortgage, to meet your domestic needs, or to do something we can't even describe. If you have a 12-month loan with us, let's talk. We have the special personal loan top-up to reduce your interest rate, extend your repayment period, and give you relief for the season. Call 059-384-4898. That's 059-384-4898. ADB, truly a Greek and more.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
So if you dey wonder how I do my thing, it be my God. No money, how me here while I can, it be my God. So when you see me rolling on your block, it be my God. Like a sickly woman, cocoa, cocoa, in my God. I never dey wonder, never worry. My baba dey my body. I never dey holla for my money, I call on my God. I never dey wonder, never worry. My baba dey my body. I never dey holla for my money. I call on my God. My people, let me hear you say.
Nothing no be coco for my God.
Be coco, be coco, be coco.
No wahala be coco for my God.
My
Jockey for my God, oh. Asoto for my God, oh. I go Shokoto for my God, oh. And I go the Shockey for my God, oh. Asoto for my God, oh. I go Shokoto for my God, oh.
When I'm shopping, there's nothing I know go fee afford, oh. See me rocking my Balenciaga for my God, oh. And by His grace, there's no girlie I know go fee run, oh. On a beat and I dedicate it to my God, oh, hey.
633, getting into a newspaper review segment brought to you by Total Energies. A poorly maintained car engine can age faster. That's why we offer specially formulated quartz engine oil with ART. What is ART? Age resistance technology. Oh, we need that, please. A breakthrough innovation ensures optimal performance for your engine, improves protection against mechanical wear by up to 75%, even under extreme temperatures and pressures. Choosing quartz from Total Energies is choosing the engine oil that keeps your engine running efficiently and effectively. Quartz keep your engine younger for longer. And Mr. EL, Elom Adabala, aka EL. He said he go Shokoto for Ngoi. He says there's nothing he can't do.
It's a really good song.
The part of the song that I find a bit perverse, he says there's no girl I know go fee run.
Yeah! Yeah, by the mighty power!
No. The theology of that song, so
don't worry.
That part of the song is
for
not
those that applies today.
No, he's thanking God because by the grace of God, there's no girl he cannot run.
Everybody has their interest about the power of God.
As a Christian gentleman, I protest.
God, all things are possible.
We Presbyterians call ourselves Christian gentlemen, and he's one. So I'm speaking to him as his senior. He has to do something about that.
at that time, it was like a different sport.
Yeah, because I'm sure the loyalists of the Lord God, who believe in the possibility.
The Lord doesn't give you power to do something. Even by the grace of God, you know, there's no girl and no go fee run.
Yesterday, did you see the video of the Blasters trading grounds?
Yeah.
Whereby the power of God, they were holding the pole physically.
You know, the day before that, I think there was a, I don't know whether it was a wind or something, but the goalpost fell off.
But there are also believers that
something
else was in the mix.
Then the Angolans are in trouble. If the goalpost is falling on our own players before they come, them.
But yesterday, you know, they were macho men holding the pole.
They were holding it before.
Anyway, welcome to you, the show, Godfrey Richard. Richard went on some small galamsey expedition.
Please, it was not a small galamsey expedition.
No, it was
the way you are now playing.
No, it was a relatively important.
The relative.
No, he will file a report.
A render account.
Yeah.
A render account.
He will file a report. So,
to the governance.
When we see the report, we decide what necessary actions to take. But yeah, welcome back.
Welcome from Abuja.
Thank you, my brother. How's everything?
Charlie? We are improving small.
After going to work,
it's going to work, hopefully.
Okay, let me take you to the front page of the Daily Graphic, where things need reforming. Let's reform political party financing. Former President Mahama is speaking.
Okay.
Interesting. Refund on earned salaries, allowances, or face prosecution. Fair Wages and Salaries Commission warns banks, employees. Ankafo Psychiatric Hospital owes suppliers 2 million Ghana cedis. Ministry of Health takes delivery of 500,000 doses of measles rubella vaccine. Comes with a photo of the recent award winner, current health minister Kweku Ajimaimenu.
Okay, let me take you to the Ghanaian Times for this morning. Big story says farmers' pension scheme takes off. Kokobo targets some 800,000 cocoa farmers across the country, and the first phase registration is expected to start in the Ashanti region of the Republic. Also, Ghana takes delivery of some 500,000 more measles vaccines. That's good news coming in. And then something here that says regulate social media online activities. That's coming in from the NMC. And then also Attorney General holds talks with UK Deputy Prime Minister. And we're told that the NIA has started printing 541,529 Ghana cards backlog.
Front page of the Anchor newspaper this morning still stays with the ECG. They've been on their case for some time. ECG pays meter reading staff a paltry 1,000 Ghana cedis as salary. You had the ECG boss on your show yesterday. It says no transport allowance, medical care, or provident fund as anger brews. Whole West NDC boils over Mugabe MP. I'll give you details. And a very sad story. Woman dumps newborn baby in latrine over alleged hardship.
Let me take you to the Chronicle. Alan Cash drops a massive cash at MPP head office to pay for the printing of Delegates' album. Also, Parliament to decriminalize suicide. A photograph of the speaker is here, looking very royal. I'm not an illegal minor. An MC is quoted here saying, an NMC again calls for regulation of social media to curb disinformation.
And finally for me, Bernard, the front page of the Daybreak newspaper this morning, they have the Alan paying for the albums story as well. But they lead with poverty our enemy, development our objective.
Okay.
This is coming from the Vice President, Dr. Mahmoud Baumia.
And let me take you to the Business Finder. MPs cast a vital vote today on critical revenue bills needed to facilitate IMF board approval. Also, review cocoa pricing, Cocoa Board tells EU, and Ecobank named Ghana's best trade finance provider. Also, I have the new crusading guide for you this morning. The big story talks about Alan flexing his Maxwell, printing albums for 200,000 MPP delegates. Also, Ghana's leadership in rule of law, commendable. The UK Deputy Prime Minister is telling Ghana's Attorney General. And support Ghana Rice Project, CEO of AAC tells Ghanaians.
Let's go online, citynewsroom.com. Pay your debt, even if you don't see bills. This is ECG MD to postpaid customers. Also, Mahama proposes state funding for viable political parties. Kojo Bonsu says, top competition won't push me out of NDC flag bearership race. And then government, Ghana's credit ratings to improve if we cut down expenditure. This is an economist. Still on citynewsroom.com, a few more stories for you. Muslims begin Ramadan fast today. Konfanochi Hospital blocks IT system to disallow social media access to work. We need to talk about this. And then ECG rejects 4 million CD payment, disconnects Star Steel Company over 10 million CD debt. So there's a lot of ECG activities as well. And then Kwabena Dufour to file nomination forms today. Keeping an eye on this NDC race. MyJoyOnline.com, directing CID to probe Jubilee House, Galamsey claims could be a plot to clear officials. This is Dr. Apak alleging. Also, Ghana Immigration Service cancels filling of embarkation and disembarkation forms. Did you fill any form when you came down?
No.
Okay.
It was done, you know, they are trying to test something.
Yeah, so the Immigration Service wants to do this. ECG boss says he's received calls to stop disconnection exercise and then crack down on fraudulent payrolls as fair wages and salaries hints at audit. You read that story earlier on as well. City Business News, Fitch upgrades Ghana's long-term local currency IDR from RD to CCC. And then producer price inflation drops to 50.8% for February this year. And then the big story in the world globally is that US has raised its interest rates again, despite the turmoil it caused. You know, initially it caused turmoil in our country.
Yeah.
Now, the four banks who fell, you can trace quite a number of their challenges to the rising interest rate, because once the interest rate rises, it affects many, many bonds and things. But the US Federal Reserve has chosen to maintain an upward movement of their interest rate. Economists see that as a gamble because it could further worsen the economies of many countries and also unsettle U.S. banks. So then there's a big showdown in the U.S. Congress today over TikTok's future.
Yep.
So I feel between the TikTok issue, social media, and all these things, we can talk about that. The U.S. Congress would make a major decision on TikTok today in their deliberations, so we'll talk about that as well. Let's start with the
let's talk about what you want to deal with. Let's reform political party finance.
Yeah, why not?
There's another story too here that talks about MPs voting today on critical.
Okay, so then let's take those two stories together. So you start with that's a massive story today. We've been trying to find those documents for some time.
There are three key bills, one of which has generated a lot of concern. The stabilization bill, they call it. Let me get the proper name for it. So there were three in the graphic a couple of days ago. It's called Growth, and sustainability levy. A number of companies are saying that it could make businesses very uncompetitive. Let's have the details.
Okay, so Elvis Dako, writing for the Business Finder, says that Parliament is expected to vote today on the Income Tax Amendment Bill, Excise Duty and Excise Tax Stamp Amendment Bills, as well as the Growth and Stability Levy Bill. Now, approval of these outstanding revenue mobilization bills will facilitate the approval of $3 billion US from the International Monetary Fund program at the staff level, and then ensure that eventually we get executive board approval from the fund. Now, the passage of the bill of all the outstanding revenue bills, which are necessary for effective budgetary implementation, as well as boosting efforts at increasing tax to gross domestic product from less than 13% to the sub-Saharan average of 18%. Now, the passage of the bills will enable government to complete 4 out of 5 agreed prior actions in the staff level agreement. Already, government has completed, and it goes on to tell you about what they
used to do. So, the categories are banks, 5% of profit before tax. All right, and this banks category includes so there's banks who pay non-bank financial institutions, insurance companies, telecommunications companies liable to collect and pay CST, breweries, inspection and valuation companies, companies providing mining support services, bulk oil distributors, OMCs, communication tower operators, companies providing upstream petroleum services, companies and institutions registered by the SEC, so a lot of financial institutions, specialized deposit-taking institutions, electronic money issuers, that includes the telcos, and then the fintechs, shipping lines, maritime and airport terminals. All of these companies will pay 5% of profit before tax. Then category B, mining companies and upstream oil and gas will pay 1% of gross production as tax. And then category C, all other entities who fall into category A or B, all other entities who do not fall in category A or B, which is you and I and other people, will pay 2.5% of profit before tax. So the government is really determined to rake in money. So that's the one that's generated quite a number of conversation.
But how does that ultimately impact the average Ghanaian or all you and I?
Well, it's a good question we'll discuss during the day. I'll be speaking to the Deputy Finance Minister on this.
Okay.
So that's the big story in Parliament today. Go for it.
Let me take you to the conversation about political party financing and the need for reform as presented by the former president. He was at the UPSA to address this matter. Now, one of the reforms he recommended was public financing of political activities, which must be accompanied by public funding of political parties' bill. While the law that enjoined only citizens of the country to contribute financially to political activities should be enforced, as well as compelling political parties to declare their incomes and their sources. Mr. Mahama said if the country continued with the current system of campaign financing, quote, our democracy will gradually turn into a plutocracy, a country ruled indirectly by a few wealthy individuals. He addressed state financing and said at the moment Ghana cannot afford to fund political parties, and then also addressed legal reforms. He said that should start with Articles 55 of the 1992 Constitution, which dealt with political parties and the Political Parties Act.
I think there's a lot of sense in that. The only point to add is that the whole thing about political financing should be situated within the whole issue of political reform. Political party and electoral reform, to include even things like appointments onto the EC, because there are conversations about who can be appointed to be on the EC without it going through parliament as a board member. And then the issues of also how can the EC check political parties. So if eventually we say the state will support political parties, then the political parties must be more accountable to the Electoral Commission. That means the EC must be more accountable to parliament. So it's almost like there's a whole chain of things that need to happen for our political space, electoral political space, to become more transparent and more efficient. So it's a good conversation.
And there's also an interesting observation I've made. You know, people are doing, all these new guys who want to become members of parliament are doing quite a lot of crowdfunding.
Yes.
And they are doing it on these international platforms. Now, our law says that non-citizens are not to contribute to the fortunes of people seeking political office or political parties seeking to rule us or to govern us. The question is, these guys who are receiving funding for non-citizens from outside the country.
But how do you know they are non-citizens? You know, there are a lot of Ghanaians abroad.
Yeah, but you see, if you go through the profiles of some of the people donating and why they are donating, these are non-Ghanaians.
Charlie, so, it's a nice conversation. So let's add it to the point about the financing politics mm-hmm. in the country.
Let me take you to page 3 of the Chronicle. Parliament to decriminalize suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes Ansah reporting says Parliament has read for the second time the Criminal Offences Amendment Bill 2021, which seeks to decriminalize suicide. Now, the motion to read the bill, which was laid in the House in August 2021, was moved by the Member of Parliament for the Akachi South and ranking member of the Constitutional, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee, Bernard Ahiafo. Now, aside decriminalizing suicide, the bill, when passed into law, would also help decongest the prisons of our country and reduce caseloads on prosecutors.
Wonderful. Long overdue.
Yeah, this is some good news. Let's talk about Cocoa Board. They are on page 35 of the Daily Graphic, and they say they have lost $180 million dollars due to smuggling. That's 75,000 tons.
You know, we dealt with this on Monday.
On Monday. They are talking about it now. They are very, very worried, obviously, because the whole week they have been addressing this matter.
Wow.
Now, the stolen beans, according to the deputy CEO in charge of finance and administration, have been smuggled to neighboring countries.
Cote d'Ivoire in particular.
Yes, Mr. Kankra said Cocoa Board and state secretaries had also retrieved more than the 1,500 bags story that came up.
Yeah.
Mr. Anka also spoke about revenue losses. They've spoken about arrest. He's very worried. Mm-hmm. He says that the interception brought to the fore the magnitude of cocoa smuggling in recent times and the cost to the national purse through revenue. And I think you made the point that day that this is not something that can be solved by law and order.
No, you know, it's also economic.
It's the very, very much differentials.
A lot of times, when people notice there's a chance to make money on the differentials in price, you need to deal with that. Now, ECG is not happy. They are making a lot of noise, and I'll come to that. But let's continue with the farmers.
The farmers, because there's a story on page 13 of the Ghanaian Times which says farmers' pension scheme takes off, and Cocoa Board is targeting some 800,000 cocoa farmers. Now, the story from Kingsley E. Hope in Kumasi says Ghana Cocoa Board has started a full implementation of the Cocoa Farmers Pension Scheme. Now, this followed a successful piloting of the scheme in New Edubiasi in the Ashanti region. Now, the first phase of the registration exercise has started in the Ashanti region in Bakwa, Obuasi, New Edubiasi, and Tuakrum, Joaso Tepa, and Nyinahini, with about 90% of the farmers registered. Now, about 800,000 cocoa farmers are targeted to be enrolled onto the scheme. Now, this came up at a press briefing here on Wednesday, basically in Kumasi, and some other details.
ECGMD is on a roll. Samuel Mahama is admonishing users of postpaid meters to visit the offices across the country to pay their debts without waiting for the company to issue bills. You know, yesterday Umaru Sanda asked, some people say, look, you don't send us bills, and you say we're owed. Speaking on Eyewitness News, the MD said, why would you owe so much money and not make any payment on account? So his point is that, you know, you use power. So even if you don't have a bill, you use power for 6 months. Estimate, but that's actually true, right? Yeah.
So you reduce your burden.
Yes. So he's saying that in the case of residential customers, they say you haven't sent us bills in a long time, but you have received a bill before. So you can even use your latest bill and make those payments and then pay the differential later. Mm-hmm. The other point is that they rejected a four million payment from a steel company because they say it's not enough to match the shortfall. So ECG Task Force rejected a 4 million part payment offered by the Star Steel Company at Pram Pram. ECG insisted on full payment or at least 50% settlement to avoid disconnection of any customer.
You know,
steel companies use a lot of power. And quite a number of the companies that have been focused on are in the high power usage categories. For me, I think ECG is doing the right thing. So we should just encourage them. But they should also just make sure they give us the right service.
Yeah.
But they've basically forced the company to make a 50% payment. Otherwise, they'll do a disconnection.
I was listening to a presentation during my quick session. You know, what's the name? This Asari guy. Is it David Asari, I believe, from Imani, Ghana. Brilliant presentation on how we're doing with power supply within the region. And then also Ghana's relatively high operational losses we see in the power sector.
Yeah.
I think these are some of the things that would need to be effective.
The MD has also revealed that he has received calls to stop the disconnection exercise they are embarking upon.
MD Tuaso.
He says he received some of the calls are from friends, power brokers, and politicians. Mm. And then he said the request made is, can you hold off? But he says, Bede.
but while he's saying Bede, the anchor says the people who read his meters too are underpaid. So he should go and deal with that matter.
He needs to collect the money before he can pay them.
Says that the paper says they are reliably informed that some of these persons have been working for between 24 and 15 and 24 years, but have not received salary increments. They don't get transport allowance. They don't have medical care. Mm-hmm. I'm quoting one says, "You are under this scorching sun from Monday to Saturday. When you are sick, you have to pay your hospital expenses from the meager salary they pay you. You're not entitled to anything. In fact, nobody cares about you and your welfare, yet you are expected to work hard."
Let's use the system other countries use, where you read a meter yourself and send it to the ECD. Mm-hmm. Take a photograph of what the readings are, send it to them. And maybe you will reduce cost with that.
Now, the social media story is key because Konfanochi Hospital has blocked IT systems in the hospital to disallow social media access. Now, according to the hospital, a lot of the staff are not focusing on patients. Hmm. You go and see a nurse. She's on Facebook or she's on TikTok.
It's actually to TikTok. Now, you look at your live.
She look at your face and can say, "Okay, wait." Then she's doing her TikTok. So, Professor Otri Adamensa, CEO of the hospital, says the lives of patients who visit the hospital are at risk, and therefore they have decided to cut access to social media within working hours. I think that's fantastic.
But how are they now on their phones?
Maybe it means that they are, maybe unless maybe the hospitals
staff are
using the Wi-Fi of the hospital.
Okay.
So maybe there's a hospital Wi-Fi that they use.
Yeah, but then
that will block you from doing what?
They probably will block certain sites on the Wi-Fi.
Okay, that's possible. But the phone bed, if you are using your own
device, that means you are very determined to do WhatsApp. So that's at
They are determined.
Yeah, but I think that for me, he can do what he can do. Block access to their IT system, and then the Wi-Fi too. You can issue. In fact, it's possible that within some areas, you can actually block access on websites, even if you use your own data.
Oh, I see. Maybe
you can decide to say that within this geographical area, you block access to these sites, and it's possible that it will be blocked.
Yeah, because you go on TikTok and people are in hospital and they are doing live, when instead of treating their patients and all kinds of things. Let's manage social media use. Well, if you go to page 13 again of the Ghanaian Times, there's a story there. Regulate social media and online activities. NMC is advocating. Now, Benjamin Acton Tete says that the Executive Secretary of the National Media Commission, Mr. Josh Sapong, is advocating more regulation of the media space, especially online and social media. Now, this, he emphasized, was to help curb the issue of fake news, misinformation, and disinformation in the country. Mr. Sapong stated these at a forum organized by the Media Foundation for West Africa in collaboration with the National Peace
Council. Did he give any details as to what the regulation means in terms of what type of things they want to look at?
Well, he says, the story says, according to Mr. Sapo, arguments that the internet and social media platforms were big to contain. It was undemocratic to control social media. Regulation limits of free expression being made by some sections of the citizenry and other government officials were not true. Now, he explained that other media platforms, such as the print and broadcast platforms, as at the time of their invention, faced the same challenges in terms of the amount of content it could contain. But that was not the situation anymore.
Well, what is required from the National Media Commission is a far more comprehensive
policy,
presentation on this matter.
Mm. Okay.
With their own proposals on what, because they are the National Media Commission. You understand? So,
meanwhile, today, TikTok CEO Shu Zihiu.
what's up?
Shou, Shou, Z-I-Z, Chiu, C-H-E-W, that's his name, Suji Chiu, will be opening a lion.
C-H-E-W.
I no lie you. That's what they've written here. Will be opening a lion's mouth and placing his own head into it.
I love that guy.
He's giving testimony in the U.S. Congress for the first time. Mm-hmm. A scary thing to do. This is BBC's analysis by James Clayton and Ben Derico. Now, and at stake is the future of the phenomenally popular video sharing app in the U.S.
Yep.
Now, I think that there is a real risk that if this hearing doesn't go well, that could have a massive impact on the future of TikTok, according to the author of a book called TikTok Boom. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chiu is likely to face a barrage of questions on TikTok's relationship with China, what data it collects, and what it does with it. He will be quizzed on why several journalists were spied on by ByteDance employees, something TikTok has already admitted. Mr. Chiu will say, "User data is safe, away from the reach of Chinese government. He knows politicians from all sides want to see the platform either sold or outrightly banned in the US.
Yeah.
So according to the analyst, he's going into a lion's den. I think people who understand media should follow this hearing if it's broadcast.
It.
Then the other one from the BBC, again, on the economy, US has, the Fed has raised. So, you know, Ghana, we raise, we'll do our Fed. Nigeria did the same, but that's not a consequence of the US one. Now, the US Central Bank has raised interest rates again, despite fears that the move could add to financial turmoil after a string of bank failures. Now, I'm sure I've explained this before. The Fed raised their rate by 0.25 percentage points, calling the banking system sound and resilient, but it warned that the fallout from the bank's failures may hurt economic growth in the months ahead.
Oh, but you know this one to hit us here. This interest rate hike.
It's hit us already.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing left. No, no, but it hit us because portfolio investors diverted their money, which is what caused the currency to fall in October. So there's really nothing here to affect again. So it's now affecting their own. So like the banks who now invest in some bonds, when the US Fed raises their rates, it makes the US government bonds more attractive.
So, they are
doing what they have to do.
Somebody say you should repeat the TikTok boss name again. What's the name again?
Zhao Zi Chu.
I need to see this to help you pronounce it.
Tan Ling.
I need to see
Ling here, here.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Coming up next is City Business News brought to you by MTN. Alright, so don't carry multiple SIMs around. You can go SIMless with MTN's eSIM and enjoy the convenience of connecting multiple phone numbers to one single phone or device. To check if your device is compatible, simply dial *#06#. Once you receive an IEID number, it means your phone or device is compatible. Simply download my MTN app today to request your MTN eSIM and enjoy the sweet, seamless life everywhere you go. Michael Obodu is here with the news.
Hello and welcome to the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN Goal and powered by your most comprehensive business news website, citybusinessnews.com. Coming up, as ratings agency Fitch reviews Ghana's ratings upwards marginally, economists calls for reduction in government expenditure and debt restructuring to improve the country's international ratings. Also, minority in parliament joins call for probe into Ake AGM GNPC deal. Let's head straight into our stories now, as economist Professor Lord Mensah has indicated that Ghana could improve its ratings from international ratings agencies by reducing its expenditure and successfully restructuring its debt. The recent upgrade of Ghana's long-term local currency issuer default rating to CCC from RD by Fitch, along with the upgrade of issue ratings on local currency bonds, reflect a positive development for the country. However, Professor Lord Mensah emphasized that the government needs to seek advice on how to improve the economy for a more positive outlook.
If government will listen and try as much as possible to reduce expenditure, that will improve. Probably the rating we find ourselves in will be even, you know, lower. We could have even done better. So there's always room for improvement. Let's see what comes up in the next few weeks when, you know, we are able to get our external debt, you know, restructuring, and then we are able to get IMF program. Possibly the IMF program squeezing government to cut down expenditure. That will, you know, improve the ratings further.
Professor Lord Mensah is an economist. Now, the minority in parliament is calling for a probe into the Ake AGM GNPC deal. This follows calls by civil society organizations for government for President Akufo-Addo to commission an inquiry into the transaction in which the Ministry of Energy and GNPC wanted the state to partly acquire the block for $1.65 billion some 15 months ago. Recently, AGM Petroleum announced that it had relinquished its interest in the South Deepwater Tano block after carefully considering all options. Addressing the media, Deputy Minority Leader Emmanuel Amakufibua insists that more needs to be done regarding this matter and the whole issue of Ake Energy's oil holdings in the country.
The only chance we have is to develop the quick one, which is the Ake part of the block, and they've given them 10 extensions, and Accra is going back for another extension. The other part of the block, which is the AGM part of the block, was the one they almost duped us as a country, and we stood up for Ghana. And we want the record to be very clear that the minority, NDC minority in parliament, stood up when Accra tried to sell the AGM South Deep Water Tunnel. We stood up, we spoke, and the record is very, very clear, and it's here. I want the people of Ghana to know that we are standing here firmly on their side on a daily basis, and will never betray the people of Ghana. Well, I think that a lot of groups have called for investigation, and we support that call. The reason is because a company that has come to Ghana that buy this asset and has convinced officials of the state with the audacity to bring that agreement to parliament. Can you imagine that if we had basically indeed bought an exchange money, if we did, then it means that today we will be talking about almost 1 billion plus that we had sold an asset that has no value. That's why we believe that that whole circumstances leading to Accra's proposal to sell that block must be investigated.
Emmanuel Amakufibua is the deputy minority leader. Now, the Ghana Chamber of Mines has strongly condemned the recent attack on the Bensu concession of Golden Star Resources Wassa mine in the Western region, which resulted in several injuries and millions of Ghana cedis worth of property damage. On Thursday, 16th March 2023, illegal small-scale miners set on fire some properties belonging to the mine. The properties include 12 vehicles, among others, were set ablaze, including excavators, ambulances and pickups, forcing the staff of the company to run for their lives. The chamber expressed concern about the growing insecurity for workers and the mining industry as a whole, and called on the government to prioritize the security of the mines. The CEO of the Ghana Chamber of Mines, Dr. Suleiman Akune, in a press statement further commended the Ghana Police Service for their swift action in arresting suspects and hopes for a swift prosecution. Away from that, the Ghana Cocoa Board has begun enrolling cocoa farmers in some districts of the Ashanti region onto the Cocoa Farmers Pension Scheme. According to officials of Cocoa Board, the exercise forms part of a broader strategy to incrementally enroll cocoa farmers across the country onto the scheme. City News' Ashanti regional correspondent Hafiz Tijani reports.
Cocoa Board embarked on a three-week pilot phase of the scheme at New Edubiase in the Ashanti region after it was officially launched by President Akufo-Addo in 2020. The pilot exercise was to allow officials to educate and sensitize cocoa farmers on the scheme and train LBC staff in the use of mobile phones to conduct cocoa purchase transactions in the cocoa management system. Cocoa Board says the exercise has been of immense help and has thus moved to implement the scheme.
Cocoa farmers in Draso, New Edubiase, Antua Krum, Bekwai, Obuasi, Ninahini and Tepa, who have been registered under the CMS and given cocoa cards, are being enrolled at designated centers. We have therefore employed 260 enumerators, CMS enumerators, to visit cocoa communities, and we encourage farmers to get enrolled and contribute towards their pension. As the slogan of the scheme goes, Ejumafoji pensioner, Ukwanisu Bejibi.
Chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Cocoa Farmers Pension Scheme, Daniel Edumensa, gave further highlights of the scheme's implementation when he spoke to journalists in Kumasi.
For the start, the Ashanti and Western South Cocoa regions have been selected for this phase, which is the phase one. Altogether, some 15 cocoa districts where data captured by the CMS have been declared clean or deemed comprehensive are involved. There are also plans to scale up the exercise to cover the remaining 55 cocoa districts in the country. So there are 70 cocoa districts and we are starting with 15.
A farmer who signs on to the scheme at age 50 or below is eligible to retire and receive pension benefits at age 55. A farmer who, however, signs on to the scheme after attaining 50 years become eligible to retire after contributing for 5 years, regardless of the age of entry.
That report was by our Ashanti regional correspondent Hafiz Tijani. Now, on the interbank foreign exchange market, where banks trade amongst themselves, the dollar remained unchanged and is selling at 11 cedis 2 pesos. The British pound is selling at 13 cedis 5 pesos. It recorded no price change. The euro remained gained 1 peso and is selling at 11 cedis 9 pesos. However, at some forex bureaus in the capital, the dollar is selling for 12 cedis 65 pesos, while the British pound is selling at 15 cedis 10 pesos and the euro at 13 cedis 10 pesos. Let's join Mark Jordan Scanato of Data Bank for updates on the bonds market.
Market activity in Government of Ghana bonds improved 2.3 times from the week opening session to a total volume traded of 53.67 million Ghana cedis on Tuesday, 21st March. With the new bonds attracting only 37.46% of the total volume traded, the Data Bank bond index lost 0.24 points to 97.75 points, increasing the average yield to maturity to 9.49%. On the primary money market, the Ghanaian Treasury seeks to raise 3.21 billion Ghana cedis on Friday, 24th March. The amount raised will partly be used to cover estimated maturities valued at 1.88 billion Ghana cedis.
That was Mark Jordan Sikanate of Data Bank. And that does it for the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN Goyal and powered by your most comprehensive business news website, citybusinessnews.com. My name is Michael Obodu. Thank you for listening. Have a good business day. And as always, please stay safe.
The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
I'm picking no girls.
12 minutes past 7.
We know they got time. I mind is focused. We know they hear what we show up.
City Business News with Michael Obodu was also brought to us by Goyal, bringing good energy and passion to the game of football. Goyal supports the Black Stars as we play against Angola in the AFCON qualifier at the Babayaro Sports Stadium today. Goyal cheers the Black Stars to victory. Remember, Goyal Go Card is easy and cashless way to buy fuel, keep track of receipts, and do so much more. Goyal Go Card, the way to go. Goyal Good Energy. We are the official sponsor of the Black Stars. Kickoff is coming up next. It's brought to you by Lesheho. Did you know that for over a decade, we've been supporting the investment goals of our customers with attractive solutions? Yeah, we've always been a safe haven for depositors who value security as well as competitive returns. With easy access to track your money, we offer flexible deposit products for 91 days, 182 days, and 365 days. Open a fixed deposit account with us now. Call 0577-707-700. Let's achieve your goals together. Lesheho Savings and Loans, a trusted safe haven for your investments. Lesheho, let's improve life. Kickoff is also brought to you by Shell Fuel Save Super, Shell Fuel Save Diesel, and Shell V-Power Fuel designed to last longer. Its triple action formula improves engine efficiency, prevents deposit buildup, and protects your engine from wear and corrosion for extra cleaning, extra protection, and extra savings. So switch to Shell Fuel Save today because extra kilometers go a long way.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Big, big day for the Ghana Black Stars. All the news on that and more. Benjamin Nketiah is here. Good morning.
Good morning, Bernard, and let's get into the headlines. Ghana's Black Stars take on Angola today in the AFCON 2023 qualifiers. Also, Mohamed Salisu is a doubt for that particular game, and Mesut Ozil retires from football. let's start off from the doorsteps of the Black Stars, and it's match day for them. It is the first leg of the 2023 AFCON qualifiers against Angola at the Baba Yara Sports Stadium at 4 p.m. Now, Ghana earlier beat Madagascar by 3-0 and managed a 1-1 draw against the Central African Republic in the first two group games. Let's hear from head coach Chris Hughton speaking ahead of the big match.
Important because it is the first game, but also, you know, it's not about the head coach. It's about us playing a game at home here against very good opposition in Angola, and it's points. You know, aim of course is to qualify for AFCON and to do well in AFCON. And the only way you can do that is by winning football matches. So yes, I think for me personally, it would be a wonderful thing, and of course, hugely important to get a win, but more importantly for the team, you know, to win this game against, I say, very good opposition at home here with a tough game coming in a few days' time, it is hugely important. My experience of Angola is if I look at my involvement in the team, the squad, the association, of course, it was before I was made head coach. So I was aware, of course, as soon as the campaign started and the draw was made, that we would play Angola. So yes, as each coach would do, I've studied them in their last 5, 6, 7 games. Technically, a very good team.
Now, Chris Hughton also further revealed that goalkeeper Joseph Wollacott is doing fine following his injury scare in training, and stated that Mohamed Salisu is a doubt for the game against Angola later today.
Yes, he is fine, and also I think he posted it anyway. And I'm not somebody that goes onto social media, but I understand the significance of it. And I think there's something that went out that actually wasn't from Joe Wollacott. So no, he is fine. Of course, at the time there's concern, but very shortly afterwards we determine that he is fine. And yes, it was a very unfortunate incident. This probably gives you me an opportunity. I think it was somebody else who spoke about Tariq, the injury. If I look at the squad where we are, the only concerns would be about Mohamed Salisu, who's there's been some concerns about him over the last few weeks. He's had some difficulties, some injury difficulties over the last 2 weeks. His club have, although he played last week, the club have used him sparingly. Because of that, because of some of the issues. So this is one that we have to consider. So he would be, from the squad that we have, he would be the only doubt.
Now, the Black Stars return to action for the first time following their group stage exit at the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Hughton says his objective for the upcoming assignments is to get the right balance with his current squad.
You know, whenever you play against whatever team, you have to analyse. You have to analyse the strengths of the team. And some of what you say are obvious things. If you are conceding goals, it makes it more difficult to win football matches. So our responsibility is to get the right balance. You know, everybody wants to see goals. So there will be a percentage of the supporters that want to see more goals. There will be a percentage of the supporters that want to make sure that we don't leave too many goals in. So for me, it's about getting that balance, to have a team that's a good structured team, that defensively is good, but to win football matches you need to score goals. So this is something I'm very conscious of.
So Black Stars head coach Chris Hughton with a comprehensive breakdown on everything happening around the team just before the game. Let's get to some other games that will be played and some results as well. So Benin played out a 1-1 draw with Rwanda, and Sierra Leone also played out a 2-2 draw with Sao Tome and Principe. Now fixtures coming up today: Madagascar, they are up against the Central African Republic. Congo will be up against South Sudan. There's Ghana taking on Angola. There's Zambia versus Lesotho. There's Gabon versus Sudan. And Algeria will be up against Niger. Let's do some boxing now. And manager for Richard Comey, Michael Amubediako, has hinted that his boxer will take a cautious approach to his upcoming fight against Jose Ramirez on March 25 in Fresno, California. Now, Comey will be making his second appearance at the WBC Super Lightweight Division after managing a split draw against Jose Pedraza back in August 2022. Speaking to City Sports, Michael Amubediako says Comey has a strategy which he will implement against his experienced American opponent.
Well, every fight is an important fight for Richard. Every fight. This is no different. We're feeling good. We're feeling confident. I've spoken to Richard on a number of occasions and his training has gone well. So, yeah, we're hoping for a great performance from Richard. If you look at the caliber of fighter that Richard fought in his last four fights, it's elite caliber. He lost against one of the best ever in Lomachenko. He drew with Pedraza, who went 12 rounds with Ramirez. And the Pedraza fight, he only drew because, he got a cut in the sixth round. Had he didn't get that cut, he would have probably gone on to stop him. But because he got the cut, he stepped back and didn't engage as much.
Let's move on to some other stuff. And there's Euro qualifiers coming up. There's Denmark versus Finland, Portugal versus Liechtenstein, Italy versus England. Let's hear from England's Ben Chilwell speaking ahead of their game.
I think these are two perfect fixtures for us. These are the kind of nations that we want to be beating. We have to be beating if we want to win the major trophies. So, we're going to have to play them in the next 12, 13 months, whether it's in the qualifiers or in the tournament. So, two great games and no better way for us to start the campaign.
Now, Kazakhstan will be up against Slovenia. There's Bosnia and Herzegovina versus Iceland. And then there's also Slovakia taking on Luxembourg. Now, matches kick off at 7:45 p.m. Let's get to some other stuff. And former Arsenal, Real Madrid and Germany midfielder Mesut Ozil has retired from football at the age of 34. Now, Ozil won 9 trophies during his club career, including 4 FA Cups and a Spanish La Liga title in 2012. He also won 92 caps for Germany and was part of the team that lifted the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. So that's what's going on as far as Mesut Ozil's career is concerned. And that's all for this morning's edition of Kickoff. My name is Benjamin Nketiah, the Small Sport at citysportsonline.com.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Health Tidbits is brought to you by the Yahoo Medical Center.
Welcome to Yahoo Health in the City. Do you struggle with getting a good night's sleep? There are ways to improve your sleep habits and get the rest that you need. Let's share a few tips. 1. Stick to a regular sleep schedule. Aim for at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night. So go to bed and wake up at the same time each day to regulate your body's internal clock. 2. Avoid going to bed hungry or stuffed. Eating a heavy meal close to bedtime can cause discomfort and make it harder to sleep. So try to eat your last meal at least a couple of hours before bed. 3. Create a peaceful sleep environment. Keep your bedroom cool, dark, and quiet. Exposure to lights from TVs and phones can interfere with your body's natural sleep-wake cycle. Speak to your doctor if you continue to struggle with sleep. Call or WhatsApp us on 050-143-6662 for further inquiries or follow Yahoo Medical Center on social media for more health in the city tips. Yahoo, improving your quality of life.
Health Tidbits was brought to you by the Yahoo Medical Center.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Oh my God, yeah. 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 Oh my God, ye
Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
7:34 City Breakfast Show. So much to talk about this morning. 3 new taxes to be introduced in Parliament. Many people may say, oh, these things don't affect me. Well, you know, it's already affecting you, because if you check out the budget, there were lots of tax measures. And if you've been observing, there's already a lot more you pay in your VAT corner. There was a 2.5% increase in VAT to 15%. And if you consider the other levies that are added, like the health recovery levy, the COVID levy, the NHIL. It effectively takes your VAT rate to 21.9%, almost 22%. And now we are going to have three new taxes. Parliament is set to debate that today. The Growth and Sustainability Levy to apply from 30th March, the Excise Duty Amendment Bill and the Income Tax Amendment Bill. We'll get into those shortly. Is it time to regulate social media? If it is, how do we do that? NMC has raised that discussion, and so many things to talk about this. If you look at the Konfanochi Hospital, very interesting. The director of the hospital says, look, I'm going to limit access to social media because it's affecting work. People shouldn't be accessing their social media whilst they are providing patients with care. Is this something all health facilities should insist on? Should this thing extend to schools or extend to other workplaces? What do you think? Some will say social media is a nice outlet. It helps people maintain their sanity while at work. But other people feel like social media is a major distraction. It reduces productivity. Where do you stand? Send us your thoughts. 054-998-6996. If you are a company owner, if you run a business, do you have any concerns about how social media is used within your company? And also for certain kinds of organizations, are you concerned about the social media posts of your staff? So for example, are there rules around what can be said by people who work for you? Maybe you're in a bank or an insurance company. Can you just go on social media and comment about politics or other things? What are the rules around that? Do we have any stringent rules? So NMC is raising these things because there's a lot of pushback against regulation. The word regulation seems like a very bad word, but you have to regulate things. But the question is within what limits? And I think that's where the thinking should go. We'll try and make some sense around that for you. But it's exciting news for all Vodafone Cash customers. Making payments for all goods and services is a whole lot simpler and easier. You can conveniently make payments to all merchant numbers. Send money conveniently from your Vodafone Cash account to any merchant today. Dial *110# select option 1 to send money, option 2 to other networks, and follow the prompts to send the money. Experience the ease of transaction on Vodafone Cash. Dial *110# at any time to send money to all merchant numbers. And from now to end of March this year, insure your vehicle with Imperial General Assurance and win great rewards. Insure and pick up your fuel coupon, gift vouchers, special souvenirs, and others. Here is the big deal. Imperial General is also giving you a free one-year life insurance cover as part of your motor insurance cover. Call us on 0302-788-955 or 0577-667-436. Imperial General, solid protection. And Africana City is a compendium of inspirational stories, including Bernice Dapa, who as a child in her community used to walk to school, but today her bamboo bicycles are making it easier for children to get to school. And she also employs many women as well. And this is what Absa calls Africana City, the distinct ability of the Ghanaian to get things done. This is what inspires us and what defines who we are as a bank. To find out more, visit absa.com. And there is a super bundle offer coming in from Toyota. We're offering you a 1.4-liter Starlet, the 1.8 Corolla Cross Adventure, and the 1.5-liter Rush. Now, what does this mean? Well, if you buy any of the above-mentioned vehicles within this super bundle offer period, you get an irresistible price discount, a one-year free comprehensive vehicle insurance coverage, a one-year free home insurance cover, and a one-year free service. Visit any of our showrooms in Accra, Tema, Kumasi, Tamale, Takwa, Takrade. Call 0302-910-206. Toyota, superior quality. And enrich your breakfast with the nourishing goodness of Dano milk. It's a cool cow milk, powdered or liquid. Helps in all your beverages. Fortified vitamin A, good source of protein and nutrients such as B12 and iodine. Helps keeps you nourished and strong always. Dano is affordable and in a shop near you. Dano milk, go for it. All right, so let me come to the studio. So I think the newspaper review, you picked on the NMC story about social media regulation. Mm-hmm. And you read a bit. I really wish I could hear George Sapong on what he means by regulation of social media. Because I know a lot of people are concerned about the damaging effects of social media usage. And I need to say, for example, there is some inherent regulation. So, for example, children under a certain age cannot get onto social media. So your child cannot get a Facebook account until they get to a certain age. So that is some regulation.
Ideally. But there are kids who are on social media.
Yeah, but that's breaking. And I'm giving you an example. I'm saying your child cannot get on Facebook legally. So that is inherently, there's some regulation to ensure. And the person, if you are 21 and you are 12, whether there's an inbuilt system to catch that is part of the conversation. All right? I'm saying that there are certain loose rules around usage of these sites. And a lot of the things that you click on, they seem to try to abide by certain rules. But the question is, in practice, is it regulated? All right. Now, when we say regulation, what do we mean? Again, the NMC have to come and explain. When they say regulation, should we use it in a very general sense that there are certain rules around its usage? And do those rules have to be in accordance with any law? So, for example, there are laws for media freedom. When you come to those laws, you go through all those laws. The biggest law is the Constitution, which then talks about the guarantee to freedom of speech and all those things. Should the regulations then that are crafted then be placed aside the Constitution to say how aligned are these regulations at all? Or are there other laws that we can use? But I think the question we should all start from is, what is wrong with what we have now? What are we trying to change? Because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Maybe the Confanoche presents us with a case study of why there is a need for certain kinds of regulation. So, what is the Confanoche story? It's the largest transfer hospital in the middle belt of the country, probably in the northern part of the country, outside Accra. The CEO says he is going to disallow usage of or access to social media in the hospital. For him, it's a question of the safety of patients. You cannot combine social media, which takes your attention, with providing due care. Should that be where we should start from? Where organizations come up with their own rules for its usage and access before we come with a national law? Because once you get to the national level, people start talking about internet shutdowns. They talk about trying to control the space when elections come. So maybe I wanted you to tackle this from the Confanoche case study. And I really wish I had the voice. Caleb, if you can bring it to me. So the guy is basically saying, if I let me read the story for you to help you. It's on citynewsroom.com. The CEO of the hospital is called Dr. Adai Mensa. Authorities have disabled the hospital's computer systems to prevent staff from using social media during working hours. The move is intended to keep staff focused on patient care and improve the quality of health care at the facility. This is one of a number of measures and interventions implemented by the hospital's administration to improve patient safety and comfort at the facility. Professor Ochi Adai Mensa, CEO of the hospital, said the lives of patients who visit the facility, which serves as a referral hospital, cannot be jeopardized. He said they have therefore blocked the hospital's IT systems to YouTube and other social media platforms to prevent staff from possible loss of concentration on patient care through the use of such platforms. The CEO was speaking to the department and divisional heads at the hospital's end-of-year performance review in Kumasi. Let's hear him and then see whether that can be a good entry point for the discussion around social media regulation.
The use of mystery clients to proactively determine and enhance quality of care at the hospital. Judicious use of IGF to improve stock of logistics, consumables, and equipment for improved service delivery. Blocked hospital computer systems access to YouTube and other social media platforms to prevent staff from possible loss of concentration on patient care through the use of such platforms. Strengthened the quality assurance unit to prioritize quality of care issues, promptly address patients' concerns, and promote system improvements at the hospital.
So he said it as part of a broad range of things they were doing to improve the hospital's performance. So I'm not even sure if this qualifies to be the regulation we are talking about at the national level. But what are your quick thoughts on what this guy is doing at Cog Vanochi?
Well, Bernard, I think it's the right approach because, I mean, if you don't have an umbrella policy at the national level dealing with a matter like this, it would be proper for employers and then managers to intervene at their various levels. Because if they do that, then we bring about sanity. The reason is important is that within various spaces, a number of things are happening. And I remember that very recently, the Honourable Marking made a statement on the floor of Parliament, which also got the Minister for Communications to speak to the matter, having to do with regulation generally, and then also the fact that kids are getting onto social media and they are getting exposed to all the vagaries that social media sometimes has to offer, although there are positive sides to going on social media and learning new ways of doing things. And then also, there are also concerns from other parts of the world that, for instance, nurses are on social media, patients are convulsing. For some reason, instead of addressing their situations, they are not addressing it. They are busy talking to people who are virtually appearing on their timelines or TikTok, for instance, chatting with them when a patient is in distress. Negligence would come in to say, let's hold the nurse responsible. But if the person dies, that's the end of it. You can go to court and seek some compensation. But that's the end of the person's life. The person is dead and gone. So it is important that managers intervene the way they are doing. Because, Bernard, let's face it. You go on TikTok today, there are people who are driving long distances. They have a camera fixed in front of them. They are speaking to the camera. They are driving trailers.
They are doing live reports.
Like how you do your television show.
And what are they talking about?
They are sharing their life, how they are living life. They are talking about all kinds of things. They say, you know, touch, let's connect. All kinds of things are happening, particularly on TikTok. That's not to create problems for the platform. It has its own good size. But, you know, Bernard, you know that when you're driving on the road, you need to have all your senses properly focused on what you're doing.
Let me digress and then come back to you. What is it with TikTok that makes it so popular? Because we've had social media platforms in the past, okay, and they've changed. So originally we had the Facebook, which is the main one people were using. Then there's also Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can even say YouTube is a social media platform. There's WhatsApp as well. But even there was Snapchat at some point. Yeah. But what makes TikTok so pervasive and makes it so... I mean, I'm not on the platform, so I don't even know how it works. But I hear it's a very popular platform.
Bernard,
Gopher, you know these things. What is TikTok? what is it about TikTok? Just give me 2 minutes in case Voskai continues his ambition.
Well, I think the beauty of TikTok lies in the fact of that it's short. It's you have like 15 seconds to do what you want to do, and distribute it, and it's fun. So,
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, and That is basically its secret. The fact that one is short and the content has to be engaging.
Yes.
You know, so
people can do all kinds
of funny things there and just move on with it. It's
so let me ask Facebook. So this is my view. Twitter is more about provocative, cryptic comments. So it's about words especially. Yes. Facebook has more to do with discussions and arguments and then also connecting with the possibility of connecting with people from your past. So it's a bit of nostalgia on Facebook, but a lot of it is about discourse. So you make a post and then there's a lot of discussions.
Yeah.
YouTube is just videos, right? WhatsApp is more personal. If I have your contact, I connect with you.
Yeah.
So what is the advantage TikTok has over the, for example, Snapchat, I know, was the fact that messages can disappear.
Yeah.
So you can quickly update people and then it goes. So that's what makes Snapchat popular for a period. What is the unique selling proposition of TikTok that makes it such a big phenomenon? Is there anonymity there? Is it?
No. It's not the anonymity. It's community. And it's also the engagement around it.
Oh, I've forgotten Instagram as well. Anyway,
short videos.
Okay. Short videos.
Yes, again, it's just the shorts. Okay, and the nature of the shorts that you can do with it. Okay, and the engagement that it allows around the shots. So the thinking around it again is just how communities can engage with one video and how it moves. And because of the speed with which the engagement happens and how the distribution works,
mm-hmm.
a lot of social media content creators realized it was far more effective than what you get from your Facebook shorts or your Instagram,
even YouTube shorts. The phenomena of shorts is an attempt to compete with TikTok.
Yes.
Because if you look at your YouTube feeds or even your Facebook, these days they emphasize the shorts.
Yes.
Because they realize people have a shorter attention span.
Yes.
Which means they are trying to mimic the TikTok model within their existing platform.
Yes. Right. And so it's just the end. What made it even work more was once COVID struck.
Yeah, during the lockdown.
During the lockdown and people were in. The fact that they could mix music, the fact that they could... People created all kinds of things using TikTok to while away the time. And it picked up from there. And so if you would realize, its growth period was not the same as the others. TikTok came in 2018 and within a year or two has 1 billion users. If you look at Snap, Instagram, and the rest, they've not had that kind of growth. It's taken them far longer. But TikTok has moved exponentially. And also because of its obvious financial, you know, the financial returns that come from there, because for a lot of users, they are selling products. You can support your favorite TikTok content creator using the in-app purchasing platforms.
So it's good for business.
It's very good for business, and so a lot of
it's growing content rapidly.
Creators have decided to move their businesses onto that.
Is there
platform.
An age limit for any of these platforms? The fact that
yes,
so you have to be 18.
Yeah, you have to be a certain age too.
Okay, no,
so
generally they allow for around over 13 years. Yeah, so if you read any of the policies, they will say you should be at least 13 years. But again, parental guidance and control comes in. But as you already know, adulthood with general, maybe to hit the majority, you need to be at least 18 years or so.
So that's the main. Okay, I'm coming. So Goffert has spoken about the way the system works, mm-hmm. and he's also then spoken about the advantage it gives in terms of communication, marketing, and content creation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the worry? All right, maybe the worry. And from my personal point of view, for example, the phenomenon of shorts I've always had a problem with, because I feel like there's a certain sense in which everything has to be reducible to 30 seconds. So somebody does a radio discussion for 3 hours, but the shorts will trend because the 30 second thing he said is funny. Now my challenge with that is that what you're doing is context is lost for many issues, and I'm talking for news now, so they just want to hear the highlight, the funny part, or the part that can be remembered. Now, what that also does is that it's priming people. So people are no longer interested, are no longer thorough. People can no longer sit through and read a long story. So they just want something short. So in the same way that the average length of an online report is becoming shorter, people's attention span is also becoming shorter. And I have a problem with that. You can do a 30-minute speech and they just want a 15-second part, which is so funny that they will be sharing, which may even misrepresent what you are really trying to say. So I have a challenge with that. I'm not saying there shouldn't be that, but if that becomes the mainstay and that becomes the main way people consume what you do, people are looking for headlines, they are looking for sound bites, and sound bites don't really capture proper journalism. All right. So from a purely media perspective, yes, they are good for content creation. So there's somebody's doing a dance, somebody's talking about what it, the short is good. But when they start bringing that into the... So like I do a show on TV, I interview somebody, and then he says something, and the whole focus of my one-hour interview with the guy is just based on that 15-second gaffe. It's problematic for me.
No, it should not be, because distribution-wise, it's also a massive trigger if we are to look at this in reverse. Because so, for instance, I might have missed 1 hour of your show, but I will see the 15-second on TikTok.
Yeah.
And that will get me to go on YouTube, because that's all I can get. So there's a link embedded. I might click on the link and it takes me to the full video that you have.
Yeah.
So I don't think that you can blame the shortened attention span, because significantly, if you look at audience behavior, the attention span online has always ranged somewhere between 2 and 3 minutes anyway. It's always been short. People don't have time for those kind of things. Then you add data issues, particularly in this part of the world. People will use data based on how much they can afford. You understand? So the attention span is not necessarily determined just by the fact that, oh, I am not interested in the full version. Okay. It's determined by how much data I can afford. But I'm also the point I'm just making is that there's TikTok and the other shorts serve as a good trigger to get you back.
Let me bring the regulation conversation into like three layers. The first aspect for me is where you can use it. Okay, we need to talk about where you can use it. The Confanotis story is apart.
So let's start from
then.
Since that's the main.
Then issue. What you can put on there. Mm-hmm. All right. So where you can use it means, and I'll give you a big example of this. For example, in the US,
yes,
Hillary Clinton's usage of a server, which is private server for official duties, was a major row. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, when you come to this part of the world, we don't even seem to understand what the whole US fuss was about. The fact that a government official working officially was working from an email with a private server. Most people here didn't see it as a big deal. But in that country, they saw it as a big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, you're working in the Ministry of Trade, and then you are sitting there on Facebook, on the computer of the Ministry of Trade. All right. A lot of people will do this. I'm using Ministry of Trade as an example, Keke, based on what the Confanoche guy said. So the question about where you can even access the social media, whether you are official or not, should be discussed. Then what you can put on there in relation to whether it's false or true, mm-hmm. whether it's decent or indecent, mm-hmm. and whether it's potentially injurious to other people should be the next level of the discussion. Around regulation. Mm-hmm. And then the third one will be who can go there, mm-hmm. a child, adult, age, whatever. So the issue of 13 to 15, for example, YouTube have YouTube
but in
kids.
This regard, hold on, in this conversation, are you talking about national regulation or you are talking about workplace based regulation?
It flows. So for example, where you can access it, the obviously that's a workplace issue. Mm-hmm. All right, what you can put on there can also be a workplace issue. These are all microcosms and broader issue. Who can go on there, as in who is eligible to have an account? Do you understand my point? Yeah. You can decide to discuss the national level or workplace level. If the national level doesn't have a policy around that, and I don't think national level can decide which workplace can allow Facebook or not. It's a company policy.
Yes.
But I think that national level should be more to do with what can go on there, whether it's true or false, whether it's potentially injurious to the public interest, mm-hmm. and there are certain rules of publication of decency.
Yes, but that mostly deals with, which is where your interest comes in with, the state engagement with the parent companies. So for instance, if I'm using TikTok to say something bad about the government of Ghana, right, the government of Ghana can decide to deal with me legally or whichever way, but I'm still on the platform anyway. The government of Ghana, apart from maybe suing me for defamation or libel, mm-hmm. or some other thing, I'm still on the platform anyway. So the next leg of that then is to write to TikTok and say, TikTok, we do not like ABCD, which is what we have seen. India has done it. We've seen the US try.
Even Nigeria. We've seen, Nigeria recently had a whole row with Twitter over allowing a certain comment about their mm-hmm. president.
They shut it down in Nigeria for about a week or two.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah. So, for me in Ghana, I think that we need to, what is our problem in Ghana? I think Ghana's problem is that we are unhinged. And I'm using electronic media as an example.
Okay.
Tune to a typical radio station. Tune to a typical TV station. They are doing all kinds of things. Some of the content shown on TV are even content that is not appropriate. There's no people are using other people's content and not paying for it. So there are lots of stations who just go pick some video and show. So the space of electronic media generally is poorly regulated. So I feel like the major problem for Ghana in social media will be the irresponsibility of use, in my view, by political people in particular, where somebody goes, makes a claim. I mean, somebody sits in his house and says, I have resigned from a company where I have not. Or somebody goes and writes a story about you, that you've done this. And they have no interest in the truth. The fact that somebody will click the story is what they want. All right? Which is what they mean by fake news, disinformation, or somebody can deliberately slice and dice your voice and create a certain impression about you. And because of the anonymity that the platform provides, They can do it and get away with it. So for me, if you ask me, the biggest problem is that where people should be accountable. Somebody will write a story, put a lot of lies in there, but you can't even find the person. All right. So maybe we should start from the question of how do you get onto the platform, which is why the question about how come we what are the requirements we put in place for people to even get onto the platform so that the person will be responsible.
But that's why I'm saying that your engagement then has to go to the parent company. Because how is the government of Ghana going to sit here and tell Rasky or tell Baby Kojo that why are you putting ABCD in the login?
Yeah, I agree with you. So why hasn't our government thought it wise to engage these companies at all? Because every country's rules, I mean, it's a social media platform, it's on the interweb, so everybody can access it. But there are gateways into countries.
Yes.
So there are certain things you can't show in Iran. There are certain things you can't show in China. There are certain things you can't show in the US because the territory's laws don't permit it. My point is,
and they have the frameworks in place to enforce.
But we don't even have to reinvent the wheel. Go to Europe. Go and follow how European parliaments talk to. Go and just read around what the European lawmakers are concerned about with this big technology companies. You don't even need to go to any new school. Just go and observe the specific issues they raise. Those issues are cross-cutting for all nations. For countries that want to protect their youth, for countries that want to maintain a certain level of decency, particularly for their young people, and all the things these European countries are trying to do, you can just imitate it. Because look, when it comes to technology regulation, I agree that African countries are way behind because access to technology is not that high. But just go to the latest appearance of the Facebook CEO in the US Congress or in the European Parliament and listen to the kinds of questions they ask him.
So let me give you a typical example of this. So I'm going to read for you the one country that basically put together the first online safety law.
Okay.
That was last year.
Okay.
That's the UK.
I told you.
Okay. So the online safety bill. So it requires social media platforms, search engines, and other apps and websites it will require social media platforms, search engines, and other apps and websites allowing people to post their own content to protect children, tackle illegal activity, while protecting freedom of speech. The regulator, which is Ofcom, will have the power to fine companies failing to comply with the laws up to 10% of their annual global turnover, which is where my enforcement issue comes in, force them to improve their practices and block non-compliant sites. So, for instance, let me just see this.
Well, while you're at it, let's bring tech and social media trends into the picture. Sky, I know you have a few things about this. We're trying to get more insight into the call by the NASA Media Commission, which, by the way, is the state agency that's supposed to know about these things, to regulate social media. We're trying to understand what levels of regulation we are talking about, whether it's a national level or the company level. Your own comments are welcome. 0549986996. Tech and social media trends is next, brought to you by Vodafone. Nathan Kwa will get us the trends next. All right, Nathan.
Yep. A few things trending. Black Stars trending for very obvious reasons. They play later today at 4 p.m. against Angola. There's live radio commentary on this network, so tune in from 3 as we build up there. And other sports-related trends. Sheikh Jassim is also trending. Sheikh Jassim is the gentleman who wants to buy Manchester United, so he's in the trends there. Edem is also trending in Ghana. So finally, we got the big reveal from Edem. He's not vying for any parliamentary position.
Oh, it's really some album.
So that's
surprised people didn't know this.
That is that. There are a few basketball trends and all of that. If you go to some tech news, like you said, Bernard, the biggest tech story is TikTok versus the US Congress. So today, TikTok CEO Xu Zichu will be, according to the BBC, opening a lion's mouth and placing his own head into
it. I tell you.
He's giving testimony in the US Congress for the first time, and he'll face, or likely to face, a barrage of questions on TikTok's relationship with China, what data it collects, and what it does with the data. He'll also be quizzed on why several journalists were spied on by ByteDance employees, something TikTok has already admitted. So by the time he's done, we'll know what the future is for TikTok, probably in the US or all over the world. Nobody knows.
Our second social media trends.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
All right, so 8 minutes past eight. Let me read a few quick birthday requests before we continue with our discussion. So today we're focusing on social media regulation, but we're also talking about three new tax bills that Parliament will be passing today and what they would mean for you. But good morning to our mother, Mrs. Grace Bosomtu of Dansoman. A happy and blessed birthday from your children and your grandchildren. Happy birthday to Amata Ayedu from Dr. Koyu and Imright, Registrar of UPSA. May you continue to inspire writers and encourage all to stand on principle. Happy birthday to Mrs. Maud Akosua Ashong. Everybody needs a woman like you in their life, a dreamer, a repository of knowledge, an adventurer and risk taker, a woman of principle, a fighter, a conqueror, a woman with a humongous heart of gold. We celebrate you. We love you. From your husband, Dr. Samoni Ashong. From your children, Apiele, Apioko, and Kylie. From your sons-in-law, Duke, Nayo, and Danny. And from all your grandchildren. And to Park Odankwa of Mount Olivet Methodist Church and also of Christian Homeschool Dansoman. Such a fine gentleman you are, and your love for God is admirable. Keep shining and lots of love from your nephews and nieces, from Nana Araba Arthur.
And happy birthday wishes to Ama Taidu as well. And then also Oliver Arthur, football agent, a.k.a. Kapo. He's celebrating his birthday today. So this is from all the people at Arthur Legacy, from Ajeman, from Kathleen, your sister, Leslie, Roy, everybody else. Happy birthday, Oliver.
Oh. And to my husband, Frank Kwabna Kesi, a great and wonderful birthday. Kay, you've been a wonderful husband and supported me and the kids. We are grateful to God for your life, from Joe and the children. And it's a longish one. You always have a special place in our heart, Mommy. Thank you for always being with us as a friend, a guardian, an advisor, and a trusted counselor. Wishing you lots of love, Mrs. Paulina Ofuriwa Anfu, Chief Regulatory Officer at FDA. From yours truly, Vanessa Elliott Shofa. Happy birthday to you, Mommy.
And this one is coming in from Ablasenofa Ajololo. And she says that, please wish my brother Kofi Agbedanu Ajololo. He's 68 years today. Brothers are the very best gifts you can ever get. I can't wait to celebrate with you. Cheers to another year and around the sun. Happy 67th birthday to you, my star. It's coming in again from Ablasenofa Ajololo.
All right, the British Council is saying that imagine you had the power to impact the world around you. At the British Council, they see students from all over the world with dreams of a bright future coming together for a quality education that achieves goals. Those who study abroad in countries like the UK are getting much more than just a degree. They are getting a world of valuable experiences. Visit the British Council website to find out how you can own your future. Now imagine settling down behind a steaming bowl of delicious Indomie cooked just the way you like it. The great thing is that now you can do it with an exciting new flavor. Beef it up with the new Indomie Beef. Indomie Beef is the newest addition to the great tasting Indomie you know and love. In just a few minutes, your Indomie Beef is ready to eat. Indomie tastes great. Now, if education is one of the things you want to do, then I think you need to speak to the people at Heritage Christian College. They have the BSc Nursing Degree Program, accredited by GTEC and the Nursing and Midwifery Council. With their ultra-modern and well-equipped skills lab for practicals, you will get hands-on training for the job market through technology-driven teaching and learning, coupled with entrepreneurial training, financial support, and personal development. They also have BBA programs, BSc Information Technology, BSc Information Security, and Bachelor of Theology. Contact them on 0547-777-731 or 0202-298-399. Find them at Amasaman behind the Olympic Stadium and visit their website hc.uc.edu.gh. Heritage Christian College and University Training, Compassionate Entrepreneurial Leaders. Now, the Cybersecurity Authority is exercising its mandate. Has commenced the licensing of cybersecurity service providers and accreditation of cybersecurity establishments and cybersecurity professionals in the country. Now, the regulatory activity is from March 1 to September 30 this year. Details on the licensing and accreditation procedures can be found on the website of the authority at csa.gov.gh. Individuals and organizations are accordingly advised in their own interest to engage the services of only licensed and accredited industry players. Now, if you missed the last round of the COVID vaccination between March 15 and 19, I wouldn't say the opportunity is gone, but let me just remind you that you missed out on a chance to get a booster dose. Now, the COVID vaccine is safe, effective, and free, and it reduces COVID-19 disease severity, prevents hospitalization, and death. Now, as you wait for the next round to take your jab, please continue to observe the COVID-19 prevention protocols. Wear a mask, wash your hands with soap and running water, use alcohol-based hand sanitizers, and keep physical distance when you can. Protect yourself, protect your family, get vaccinated against COVID now. This message is from the Ministry of Health, Ghana Health Service, and partners.
Happy birthday to Mrs. Frances Aba Otu Kati. A happy birthday, great mother of three, lover, best friend and all I could wish for, from your husband Shali Otukati to Mrs. Frances Aba Otukati. Happy birthday to you. All right, let me switch and then I'll reset. This switch is key because the Finance front page this morning says Parliament is expected to vote today on the Income Tax Amendment Bill, the Excise Duty and Excise Tax Amendment Bill, as well as the Growth and Sustainability Bill. Now, the understanding we have is that there are a number of prior actions for this staff level agreement that we got in December from the IMF. One of which was the PORC's tariff adjustment, the other being the release of the Auditor General's report on COVID spending. And then we are told there's also the onboarding of GetFund, DACF, and the Road Fund onto GiveMe. So those three appear to have been done. So this is the fourth one. Now, how much are we expected to get from these taxes, and why is the government doing this at this time? The Deputy Minister for Finance, the Honorable Abena Oseasare, she's also the MP for Etiwa East. She's joining us to give us some quick comments on the critical nature of these three bills, and also address possible concerns about the effect of one of them. A lot of concerns about the Growth and Sustainability Levy. Good morning, Honorable Abena. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Bernard, and thanks for having me.
By the way, how are you, and how is the economy? Are we on course?
Oh, Bernard, I'm well, and I believe you're also well, by God's grace. And the economy, we are still working hard to make sure we get it back on track.
Wonderful.
I can say that positively, things are moving steadily, and we hope that with the conclusion of the rest of the prior action, which includes these important revenue bills, and we can move to the next stage and then make some progress on the IMF negotiations, as well as bringing the economy back on track.
So the final reported that we've done three prior actions. The PRC have adjusted the tariffs, the COVID expenditure report is out, and that the DACF and Get Fund and Road Fund have been onboarded to GiveMe. Are these things correct?
Bernard, yes, you know, there are certain things that we agreed on with the IMF as part of our post-COVID-19 program for economic growth. And it's in line with that. One is to aggressively mobilize domestic revenue and also streamline and rationalize our expenditure. We believe that by bringing these statutory funds on board, on the gift list, we will be looking at the expenditures, and we'll also be bringing about more efficiency in the way they utilize the funds that are brought to them. And so we believe that it is part of the whole agenda of the PCPEC, which is the Post-COVID-19 Program for Economic Growth. And you mentioned the three revenue bills that are currently with Parliament. The first point on the agenda is to aggressively mobilize domestic revenue. And as part of that, government is using enforcing compliance, using administrative measures, as well as coming up with new taxes that we believe will help us, one, raise the needed revenue and also support us in our growth and coming back to where we were before the COVID-19 hit and the Russian-Ukraine war that has also had taken a toll on the recovery of the economy as well. So the first one, Bernard, is the Growth and Sustainability Levy Bill. If this bill should come into force, it will repeal the National Fiscal Stabilization Levy. There's a similar act called the National Fiscal Stabilization Levy, and it's the same thing. It's in this same vein that we are introducing the Growth and Sustainability Levy. But this time, we are including other categories. And so, but it's the same thing as the NFSL, but we are including other categories. With this new one, the first is we had on the National Fiscal Stabilization Levy, there were businesses who were paying 5% of their profit before tax to government to support. This bill came into effect somewhere in 2015 or so, and it was to support the economy and revive the economy and to get it back on track. And so it is in this same vein that we are doing this, but we are including this time the extractive industry. In the previous bill, the extractive industry wasn't part of it. So the existing industry or the existing entities that were part of it already paying the 5% of their profit before tax on this bill. And we are including another band of 2.5% for those who do not fall within the existing 5% category and the extractive industry. And then we have up to 1% of production for the extractive industry. We believe that we have used this in the past to help revive the economy. And so it's more of a burden sharing sort of
to
help government raise the needed revenue to support our PCPEC agenda and also to implement the budget to see the economy get back on track.
So honorable, just to clarify,
2.2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that this revenue bill, if passed, will give us about 2.2 billion Ghana cedis, which will help in our revenue mobilization agenda.
I noticed three categories for this law, this tax. The first category has 15 companies. Are you saying that this 5% before profit before tax that affected these 15 was already there in the National Stabilization Levy, and that the only new thing with this is that you are adding category B, which is the mining companies and upstream oil and gas, they are 1% of gross production, and then C.
Previously, there were 9 entities in that the 5%. We are adding 6 more.
6 more. Okay.
6 more to the 5% category.
Mm-hmm.
And this includes the communication towers, the upstream services,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of others. So there were 9.
There were 9. So it's now 15.
And then we are adding the 6 more to this category. And we have the extractive industry, the mining and gas, and the petroleum. And that is 1% of production.
Mm-hmm.
So in between the 5% and the 1%, the entities that do not fall in between the 5% category and the 1% category, which is the extractive industry, also have to do 2.5%.
So that's the rest of us, all of us, media companies, all the people who are not in the first 15 and who are not mines and oil companies. We are paying 2.5% of profit before tax.
Yes, Bernard, this is to support the economy, get back on track, and for government to also be able to implement its agenda of supporting the vulnerable who have been hit very hard by the COVID-19 and the Russian-Ukraine war. In as much as we are raising revenue, we also need to look at the vulnerable who have been hit very hard. And these are the revenues that we believe, if we raise, we can use some to support
But Honorable, you've already raised the VAT from 15%. You added a 2.5%
to
the VAT. In fact, the effective VAT rate, when we calculate it, is now 21.9% already.
The VAT rate is 15%. Bernard, the VAT rate currently is 15%.
No, when you decouple, yes, that's because you've decoupled it, but when you add the GET fund of 2.5, NHIL of 2.5, and the COVID...
Yes.
And the COVID health of 1%, that when you add that 6%...
COVID-19 is not VAT, and the others are not VAT. Those that are VAT is 15%. So,
So I'm saying that you've increased the VAT rate by 2.5%. There's also NHIL of 2.5. There's GET fund of 2.5. There's COVID of 1. So I'm talking about a purchase. If I go and buy a phone, I'm paying almost 21.9% on the phone already.
In taxes.
In taxes. This is a consumption tax. And
I understand your concern. But as a country, we need to mobilize our own domestic revenue to pursue our own national development agenda. And so these are some of the things that we believe we can do to raise the needed revenue. As we speak, when you compare the revenue we raise to our GDP, it is still way below the West African target of around 15 to 18%. We are still doing 13%. So there is more that we believe we can do. And government is not only focusing on increasing taxes. Government is also using administrative measures as well as enforcing compliance. So we believe that with all the support that we are getting from you as in the media, and Ghana and Ghanaians as a whole, we can get there. But it's a tough road.
Fair enough. There's a concern about some of the six you've added to the 11 to make it to the 9 to make it 15. For example, e-money issuers have been included in this. Specialized deposit-taking institutions have also been included. Yes. Companies registered by SEC have been included. Now, these companies will say they've already suffered. E-money issuers will say they're already suffering from e-levy. These specialized deposit-taking institutions and the SEC companies, the haircuts have already hit their business operations. Some of them, because of the exposure to government and the debt restructuring, are going to even have impaired capital. To now add a 5% profit before tax to these guys, I mean, it's almost like, Charlie, we are going to milk you of everything you have. So if I'm running any of these companies, I'll say, what does government want me to do now?
Bernard, that is not the case. In this country which we live, I mean, we need to collect taxes to support, I mean, all of us. Others, I mean, in terms of the fingers, they are not all equal. So others will need a little more, while government takes a little more from those who are able and then be able to use it to service them or to provide for those who in one way or the other are not able to provide. So this is the situation where we find ourselves. And Bernard, I think that government is pursuing the national development agenda for all and sundry. All of us who are paying taxes or those not paying taxes, we get to, use good roads. We get to go to school. We get to, go to hospitals. And so it is for all of us. So at this moment, government is saying, I need that support to enable me continue with these things. So if it is that we are taking a little more from those who are able, I think we have to support government in this agenda. Nobody likes to pay taxes, but it is necessary to enable us.
I obviously know that this tax has been there for banks, non-banking, insurance, telcos, breweries, inspection, evaluation. We understand. I'm just sort of pointing out the new guys, like the e-money issuers. And I'm speaking not because they've told me anything. I'm giving you the context for the question that e-money issuers are within the fintech community and they're already suffering from e-levy. Specialized depository institutions and SEC regulated companies have already started experiencing. In fact, a lot of them don't know how they're going to be mobilized deposits around this period because many customers have been hurt by the mark-to-market losses that were announced and then also the debt exchange and its effects. So I'm just saying that if you look at the context of where we are today, these two groups can say that it's a very difficult... And when this is passed, it will start from 31st March. So it means that it's just next week. So, I do understand that there's a sunset clause for these taxes. But my question is that if you look at the timing... The timing of this, is this not a bit callous? I mean,
Bernard, if Parliament had passed this, it would have started in January. Yes, but Bernard, we are all feeling the pinch, but this is where we also need to burden share. And so that is where we find ourselves now. Others, I mean, in trying times, we're able to do that for the whole of this country. And we are asking that let us support in this regard to make sure we get the needed revenue. And like I said, if there's a sunset clause. It's from 2023, 2024 to 2025. After 2025, we are hoping that by that time, the economy would have, I mean, gotten back to its previous state. And then this act or this bill would have elapsed by that time after 2025.
I also noticed that all other entities not falling within category A or B will get 2.5% of profit before tax to be taxed. So it means that all companies, irrespective of size, because I do know that in the past, you are distinguished between small business, medium size, and large companies. But from the way I see the category C, you just said all other entities not falling, because you've also said in the past as a government that you are interested in protecting small businesses. So there are even these tax reliefs for startups and things. So am I to take category C to include every business?
Bernard, like I mentioned before, if you don't find yourself in the first two, that's the extractive industry and then the 5% ban, yes, you have in all other entities fall within the 2.5. But Bernard, look at it. The name is growth and sustainability. We need that growth to be able to sustain businesses in this country. So without that growth, even businesses, it will be difficult for businesses to thrive. So this is where we are now, and we need that support.
The basic, at least for me, what I remember from Bani Yakub's accounts, if you tax a company, he will lay off people. Because he feels like it will affect his profit. So if a company realizes that there's too much statutories to pay, he will reduce his employment. And when you reduce employment, you are going to rather affect growth. So I actually think the name is ironic. What you're doing is you're raising government revenue, and I have no problem with that. $4 billion overall to help government do what it has to do. But the effect on private sector, all these companies may decide to lay people off or reduce their employment to cope with the pressure that they are getting from lower sales. Now, has government done that analysis to be sure that the job losses that these increased taxes will occasion will not rather stifle growth? Do you get it? Because growth is not just a function of government revenue. If companies are not employing people, they won't grow. The economy cannot grow, because if we are unemployed and we are all sitting in the house, how do we get productive to grow the economy?
Yes, Bernard, but this is something that we have to do. In as much as increasing taxes does not necessarily mean companies are going to lay workers off. Maybe they are also going to look within themselves and see how best they can cut other operations other than employees off. But let us look at the bigger picture. We want to do this in the interest of the whole nation. And it is a form of burden sharing that lets all contribute something to make our nation better than what it is now. And Bernard, you agree with me that when things were good, we were all enjoying it. We were all in this country. When things were moving well, inflation was below 10%, the CD dollar depreciation was way below 6%. We all benefited from this. And this is where we find ourselves as a result of the slow recovery of the economy from the shocks of COVID-19, as well as the Russian-Ukraine war effect. So this is where we are, and we are asking that support us in this regard is for 3 years. We are hoping that within that 3 years, we will do everything possible to make sure we bring the economy back on track. And then things will return to normal. And then we can continue to enjoy the kind of atmosphere and successes that we were all enjoying.
Now, we understand the need for revenue. But the question is, is the approach chosen progressive? I'll give you an example. Again, theoretically, we know that property taxes are possibly the most progressive of all taxes, because people at the higher property ladder arguably have more income than those who don't have property. So there's been a lot of conversation about collecting property tax. In fact, when the individual bondholders met government, they recommended that if you even collected they gave a certain calculation that you could get about 2 billion if you got 50% of household paying at least 1,000 cedis per property, using the property estimation they did. My question is, what is the government's budget for 2023 on property tax? How much are you going to get? You say you are getting 4 billion from these three new taxes. All the properties in Ghana that don't pay property tax, how much is government estimating it can get if it decides to enforce the regulation on property tax?
Okay, Bernard, we have done something in that regard. And this time, government is not sitting at the center to collect these revenues. Government has, through GRE, has partnered with the municipals, metropolitan, and district assemblies. And so what government is doing is to help them collect their taxes at those places and leave 60% of those monies at the various places, and only 40% comes to the center. And government is hoping that this will boost development in the areas, in the municipal assemblies and metropolitan as well. Mm. When you look in the budget for 2023, I think, I don't have my budget ready with me, but I think we put in 400 million. That is what is coming to the center, because we are hoping that 60% of that will go to the various DCs, and they will use it for their development there. This is the first time we are partnering with the assemblies directly and GRE. And so we didn't want to be...
But have they given you an amount they are hoping to get from this first year?
So that is what I'm saying, that in the budget, we put in 400 million.
Cities, which is different 400 million from the usual, okay.
Yes. And so I think that is on top of my head. That's what I think we put in. But 60% of those monies are going to be at the centers, the municipals, the metropolitans, and the district assemblies, and they are going to use it. It will not come to the center. They are going to use it for development. This is the first time we are embarking on this partnership. And so we didn't want to be over ambitious about the amount that we're going to collect. So by mid-year, we would know how much we have collected, and see the way forward on what else we should do
There's a strong view that the government has not led by example when it says we should share burden, and has not cut anywhere near as much as we expect it to do. In fact, when I look through the bondholders' proposals to government, which they estimated that you could save over 80 billion through what they call fiscal adjustments. Expenditure cuts. I can give you the right figure.
I just want you to confirm the figure. 80 billion.
Hold on. I'm calculating it. Yes, 83.5 billion. And this document was signed off by both Mr. Senyo Hosi and Mr. Samuel Akhest, Director of TDMD at your ministry.
The Treasury.
And I'm telling you before God, the figure they got was 83.5 billion cedis. In fact, I can refer you to some of the things. They grouped it into three. So, and Mr. Ake's signature is there. I know his signature. So they said, yes, if the government does fiscal adjustments, they mentioned the revenue side. Mm-hmm. There were about 12 different revenue measures. And then on expenditure side, they mentioned about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then they came to other recommendations. When they finished, they calculated, and for every recommendation, they had a specific amount government could save. And if you care, if you want, I can give you the names, the numbers. But when they finished, in that document, in the summary, they said that they believe that government can make, let me read that portion, that government can make cuts up to 83, or can save up to 83 billion. Yes, it says, these measures proposed above, per the estimate of the IBF, yield a net savings of 83.5 billion. The IBF holds the position that the above recommendations are competent enough to urgently address the fiscal challenges and enable us to reach the desired 55% debt to GDP target proposed to the IMF. Your director, who announced the debt exchange, signed off this document. So the feeling is that government's interpretation of burden sharing is for we to just tighten our belt, and whilst you do the minimum.
Okay. Bernard, I understand you. I understand where you are coming from, but I just want you to go through the... I don't have the budget in front of me, but I just want us to go through the budget briefly. when you take compensation, compensation alone is how much? It's close to about 50 billion. You take your interest payment. Interest payment is how much? 52 or so billion. When you look at the goods and services component, that is what the ministries, departments, and agencies use in pursuing implementing the budget to make sure we achieve the target or to help in the national development agenda. It's 6.9 billion. It's 6.9 billion. And when you look at our capital expenditure, it's less than 10 billion. So then just these two, compensation and interest payment, is taking more than 60-70% of the whole appropriation bill. So that is why we saw it necessary to do something about our debt. And so we had to restructure the debt.
Yeah, but honorable. Yes. For example, I'm commenting on what you said. You said, for example, the capital expenditure. One of the recommendations of the bondholders, which Mr. Akes signed to, was that instead of increasing the capital expenditure level, as you have done in the 2023 budget, just maintain the 2022 capital expenditure level by reducing the non-ABFA, MDA, and foreign finance CAPEX provisions by 50%. And if you did that, you would save 10 billion. But when I look at your capex for 2022, your capex for 2023 is higher. So here you are saying that we are.
They said the
capex expenditure level for this year, 2023, is higher than that for 2022. You've not reduced
by how much? Sometimes the difference is a billion or two.
An austerity period, why are you even raising capex in 2023? And it's not only that.
We should explain to Ghanaians what capex is.
Yes,
it's the building of infrastructure, the building of the classrooms, the hospitals. And are we saying that at this moment? Yes, we understand we're in a tight situation. A road is cut off and we can't touch it because this or that. Yes, there are certain things that we will have to continue to spend on. And these are some of the things we will continue to spend on. But the things that we can work on to make sure we make a drastic reduction is the interest payments and the principal payments of our debt. And that is what we seek to address, because that alone is about 53 billion. When you take that 53 billion out of the appropriation, you save quite a huge amount of money. So this is what we have to address. And then also we need to look at the inefficiencies in our compensation management, because compensation alone is more than 45, or about 50 billion. So these are some of the things that we should look at. And that is why we are coming up with the biometric is in force, and we are making sure that we validate people we pay. So we are introducing efficiency measures as well as actually cutting down. Look at the goods and services component of government.
I'm honorable. I'm speaking on behalf of the public and the many. Let me finish that question. The many suggestions, for example, there have been calls for reviewing of government flagship programs. The president has flatly refused to do this. If a government that is telling me that I should pay more taxes and that we should burden share
has this program.
Well, the president was very clear. He says there will be no review of free SHS.
In the 2023, NAPCO is no more on the flagship program. Government has saved close to a billion. So it is not that government has refused to listen. NAPCO, which was one of government's flagship programs, which had a budget of close to a billion, is no more on the budget. So government is listening.
No, but now NAPCO expired. My understanding of NAPCO was not, it was not a perpetual program. So NAPCO came to its sunset. Free SHS has not been reviewed. A lot of the government flagships
and government
are still
is
on.
Saying that we are going to review not just Free SHS. There are so many flagship programs that government is reviewing to bring about efficiency in the way we manage these things. And we believe once we review and bring about some level of efficiency, it will also reduce the cost. Government accepts that, yes, after 3 to 5 years of implementation of a particular policy, we need to sit back and look at it. Government hasn't refused to review free SHS. Government says, I will do that. And in doing that, we believe that it will come up with certain challenges and certain efficiencies and certain inefficiencies in the system that we may have to look at and address. We understand government is addressing the situation of reducing its flagship program. And we have seen that in the, and when you compare the 2023 flagship program budget to 2022, there has been a cut of more than 20%. Yes, aside taking out NAPCO, there has been a reduction in the budget for the flagship program from 2022 to 2023. There's been about 20% reduction. So it is tough, but we are listening. And maybe you haven't felt the impact as we speak, but with time, we will all feel the impact. It is not that government has turned a blind eye or a deaf ear to what Ghanaians are saying. Government has reviewed the flagship program, and we have reduced it by 20%. You can compare 2022's budget of the flagship program to that of 2023.
Well, we could spend all day going through the various suggestions, but I urge you to revisit the Indibindua bondholders' recommendations. Yes, there were about 13 revenue recommendations, and there are about 7 expenditure recommendations, and there were other recommendations which amounted to 83 billion. And when I listened to the explanation for the 3 new tax bills, I don't see any of them in those, although the official of the ministry signed off to these. So the government's posture, position, and actions will definitely decide whether Ghanaians believe the burden sharing is just rhetoric or is actually happening in actuality.
And the 2023 budget was sent to Parliament in November. We received this document somewhere in February. So these taxes are taxes that were sent, were put in the budget way back in November. There has been a delay. Otherwise, this taxes should have kicked in right from January 2023. So it is not that they have written to us and we have refused to address those concerns they have raised. These are revenue bills that were with Parliament way back in November. It's been on the order paper. We have been to the Finance Committee. The report has been brought to the Chamber, but we haven't been able to pass it. So these are not new bills that we are introducing. No. They came
just finally,
in 2023.
Finally, and thank you for your time. Finally, the minister had said in December, I think, that if we did not get an IMF deal by close of March, it would be disaster for the economy. Today is 23rd March. The IMF board had a meeting on Monday and Ghana was not on the agenda. Indeed, finance minister is in China to discuss the restructuring. We haven't done the external restructuring. We've just finished the domestic, which, and I know that the restructuring is a prior action for the board approval. So the question is a 2-in-1. Is the economy going to collapse assuming these bills fail? Because we don't know what the minority's position is on these 3 bills. If they decide to oppose it and it doesn't go through, and based on what finance minister told us in December, that if the IMF deal doesn't come in March and then the economy collapse, is the government saying that if you don't get this 4 billion approved by today, it means Armageddon for us?
No, Bernard, I don't think the finance minister said the economy will collapse. It will have dire consequences on us if we refuse to raise domestic revenue, to pursue our own development agenda. This one, you don't need anybody to tell you that. We need to raise revenue to pursue our agenda and to make sure we get the economy back on track in the interest of everybody, not just the minority or the majority. In the interest of all Ghanaians, we need to get the economy back on track. We have begun. There are certain things that we are still working on. Like you said, the external debt restructuring, we are still working on. Currently, the minister is in China and we are making good progress. And so what we have to do as a country domestically to make sure we get ourselves prepared, that is what we should focus on. And it is part of pursuing the revenue mobilization agenda. It's part of the commitment we ourselves as a country have made to make sure we raise our own revenue and reduce our reliance on debt. And so this is part of it. Mm. And we are hoping that if we should go through with this, and then we finish the external debt operations too, we'll be in a good position to go to the IMF. And remember, we did the staff level, we reached the staff level agreement in record time, and we were hoping that with the support of everybody, we will be able to also do same for.
So do you have the support of the minority on these three bills?
Bernard, I think you should be helping us, not you, as the media should be helping us, because this is our nation. This is the only country we have. And we are at a time where we need this to make progress. And so we are encouraging everybody to come on board. We believe the minority are on board, and because at the end of the day, it is one country, and we need to make sure we put all the measures in place to make this economy thrive. Because this is what we have, and this is ours, and we are the only people who can make it better.
Thank you, Abuna Osayasare, Deputy Minister for Finance and MP for Etiwa East. Lots of comments, a lot of different groups want to react. Indeed, whilst I was doing the interview, I believe a number of affected entities, particularly for the growth and stabilization levy, wanted to react. In fact, the three levies, there's another one that would affect some other companies. So, for example, the excise duty amendment will address beverage companies quite severely, and they are also already captured in the growth and stability levy. So now the excise amendment bill is to amend the Excise Duty Act of 2014 to revise the excise tax rate for cigarettes and other tobacco products to conform with ECOWAS protocols. Now the bill also increased the excise duty in respect of wine, malt drinks and spirits, and imposed excise duty on sweetened beverages and electronic cigarettes and electronic liquids, and increased revenue. Now the apart from mineral water and malt drinks, all other sweetened beverages, including processed fruit juice, do not attract excise duty. So this bill, Act 878, which seeks to amend Act, which is to be amended, Act 2014 Act 878, is to impose excise duties on these sweetened beverages. So those of you who like your sweet Fanta and those things. Which will increase the excise duty on mineral water and malt drinks. Spirits have a higher alcohol content compared to other beers, but the excise duty on spirits is lower than that of beer. So this law is trying to raise the tax on spirits as well. Sky, you know, the reason that I sort of... I'm being restrained in the interview because, you know, the government's posture throughout this period, I recall, it's always been flipped. Like, we won't go to IMF. They don't have anything good for us. They've gone. There will be no haircuts. There are haircuts. We'll get an IMF deal by March. If we don't, the economy will collapse. Now the economy will collapse, we don't get an IMF deal. Do you understand? We have E-Levy. We don't need IMF. We have E-Levy. We still need IMF. So it's a bit of, it's exhausting. And also because the government has not... So the minister is saying, well, let's come together, let's support them. People came to the government and said, look, call a Sinchi type meeting, bring everybody on board. Come. They said, no, you're not going to do that. So almost all the things that people have, including the opposition, have asked you to do prior to all this calamity, you said you wouldn't do it. Review. I remember there was a day we interviewed the minister for information. There's going to be a big meeting in Pedriasi, and he said all flagships are on the table. Next morning, No flagships are on the table. All the review. Flagships are not it going sounds, to be reviewed. You get, so it's like I want to use the word intransigence. Okay, so now you're saying we should come and now support for this to go through. Okay. It's brinkmanship for me. It's almost like they always wait for the last minute for things to get out of hand. Then they come back and then they say, oh, the media should help. I'm trying to have somebody who do have another girlfriend.
Yes, going to talk to the executive chairman of the Food and Beverages Association, Mr. John Awuni.
Oh God. So they are saying what? They are not happy. Sky, let me do that then. I can't be. So John Awuni is the main guy at FABAG, Food and Beverages Association. They are not happy with the new taxes. Mr. Awuni, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Welcome, Bernard.
So what is FABAG? Who are you people?
We are the Food and Beverages Association of Ghana. We are constitute manufacturers, wholesalers, and then distributors, retailers.
Of all kinds of foods?
Of all kinds of food and drinks.
Okay. So
you have the fruit juices, with Coca-Cola. We have Accra Brewed as our members. We have Printex. We have the Palace. We have the Melcoms. We have
you are both manufacturers and importers.
Exactly. Food and once you are in food and beverages, you are a member.
Wonderful.
You are into food and beverages.
So there are three laws: Income Tax Amendment Bill, Excise Duty and Excise Tax Amendment Bill, and the Growth and Sustainability Levy Bill. Which of them is FABAC concerned about?
We are concerned about all of them, most particularly the 20% excise duty on fruit juices and water. We are concerned about the 5% growth and sustainability tax and the last one as well. But most particularly those two bills, we think that Parliament must not approve them. We think that it's overburdening the private sector. And as we say, the private sector is the engine of growth of the economy. So if the economy is struggling, it points to the fact that the private sector is not doing well. If the private sector were doing well, the economy would not struggle. In any case, if the economy is struggling, one or two private sector players, if they were doing well, could sponsor the country, could send the country out. The 3 billion cedis they are looking from IMF, private sector, it was doing well, could have taken them out. We are against that because clearly those deals are going to send the private sector down, down, down below the line. We began the year with an increase in VAT from 12.5 to 15%, increase in water tariffs, increase in electricity tariffs, depreciation of the currency. And we have had this challenge right down from COVID-19 to 2019 down to this today. There should not be any reason why government must go out to bring in further tax in the name of raising revenue when there are huge gaps of revenue mobilization that they have not been able to explore.
But John, you are already, as breweries, part of the fiscal stabilization levy prior to this growth and sustainability thing. So the nine categories that were to pay that tax, your members were already part. So I don't really see your problem with the addition of six other groups, none of which is your member. So is it the excise duty that's the problem, or is it the 5%?
The excise duty is our problem. The 5% too is our problem, Bernard. We are talking about 5% growth and sustainability tax. For how long will this thing take? We have had, as we speak now, Bernard, we have COVID-19 levy 1%. And it was said that it was in place to raise money to take care of COVID-19. Now today, where is COVID-19? Is that levy a permanent feature? We have toll recovery levy that they brought in, that temporary. God knows when it will be removed. Now this levy that they are bringing in and say growth and sustainability tax, when sustainability for it to be removed? We are talking about 5% tax on profit before tax. Why don't they just say that they are increasing the corporate income tax instead of talking about 5% growth and sustainability tax? 5% on gross sales. That is basically what they are looking at. And then after that, then they tax again. In a situation where you very much know that the companies are not doing well, the private sector is not doing well, then I'm very much clear that the government needs to mobilize revenue to stabilize the economy. They need to mobilize revenue to be able to put in some policy in order to secure the IMF deal. But there are so many avenues, as I said earlier. Bernard, you go into a shop just near your office and see and buy maybe paint or buy anything worth even 10,000 cedis in any of those shops, they will not give you cedis. But you go into KFC and buy 10 cedis chicken, they will give you a receipt with an avalanche of taxes. Why wouldn't the government be able to ensure that they can go out, press out, and ensure that they bring a whole lot of people into the tax net, and which will even help them to reduce the tax burden of the citizens? They don't increase in taxes must not necessarily lead to bring increase in revenue. They tried that with the issue of e-levy. Have they been able to meet their expectations? You know, when the taxes go up much, you are going to be encouraging evasion. You are going to encourage people to look at dubious means. And it's like you are punishing the few players that are already complying.
What would this mean for your business operations? So that, are we looking at layoffs? Are we looking at reduced production? Are we looking at relocation? What are the issues?
Bernard, they have already been laid off. They have been laid off. They have been declined in production because demand is at its lowest ebb. People's disposable income has become very, very, very low. And it's not only low, but it's also even depreciating by the day. You go into the market, prices sometimes increase even by the hours. And I'm telling you of things that I have right on the ground. If the government really have their ears on the ground and proper research, they will not go further to bring even 1% or 0.5% increase in any type of tax. In the name of the fact that the companies will bear it, companies will pass it to the consumer. Consumer disposable income is very low. So how can they afford? So it shoots back to the fact that the companies cannot even meet their budget target or their sales target. So clearly what we are looking at, Bernard, is that let the government ensure that people who are outside the tax bracket. I have gone to buy goods so many times, worth 20,000, 30,000, without a receipt. Yet you walk into a shop and buy even water 5 cedis, and they are asking you to pay various types of taxes. Why wouldn't the GRA, why wouldn't the government push out people all over, just as they did for, they've done ECGs going around. Let them go around all over and ensure that the Madina market, the Agbogbloshie market, the Okanshi market, all over the country. People, once you have you are in a shop and you are selling, you must have a VAT receipt there. You go and buy plumbing materials worth 100,000 cedis, nobody will give you a receipt. Yet you go into a hotel with a room worth 100 cedis, then they are asking you to pay 1,000 cedis. They are asking you to pay a VAT, get paid, get fund, and all those kind of things. I don't think that's been fair to the few players that are complying. I think that the government must really look at it. This issue of taxation is not the way to go. We're told that they were coming in to move from taxation to production. This is not the way to go. And this has not been the issue particularly with this government. It has been an issue with all other governments. And we have always said that taxation will not lead us anywhere. Few people, it's like Bernard today, if you put yourself in, or go and open a barbering shop, a very nice barbering shop, they will come at you. All the government agencies start coming at you. But if you go and open like some kiosk, where nobody will mind. Just like if you put your system in a proper order to serve the country, it becomes
all right.
Punishment.
Thank you very much for your time, and I'm sure the business team will call you for further comments. That was John Awuni, president, or the main guy at FABAG, which is the what's FABAG again? Food and Beverage Association of Ghana. And they're saying that job losses have already occurred. They are not happy. They're affected in two ways. Their breweries are paying 5% of profit before tax as part of the growth and stabilization levy, sustainability levy. And now the excise tax amendments will also affect them adversely. Sky, for as I was saying, the whole tax is even a misnomer, because a growth tax, you know, again, basic economics.
Charlie.
In the US, when they say they do tax cuts, they expect private sector to benefit from those tax cuts, mm-hmm. to employ more people. More. So if you are raising taxes for all companies, particularly, mm-hmm. so what it means is that all other companies, mm-hmm. who are not listed in the 15, including yours, pension companies, mm-hmm. all of us are going to pay 2.5% of profit before tax. This is different from your regular corporate tax. Mm-hmm. So this cannot be a growth. It's basically saying government believes that they can use the money better than you. And they haven't proven to be efficient users of the money.
You see, Bernard, that is the starting point, that this government has shown all of us that it is incapable of prudently managing our resources. And on any proper thinking level, we should not be committing our resources to them again. If it were parliamentary democracy, I'm sure by now we would have removed the Prime Minister from office. Because if it was even a coalition, given how the numbers are very delicate in parliament, perhaps you would have lost control of parliament and there will be calls for a new, leader entirely, because the government simply is failing across the board. Now, the question is, should we allow them to continue the way they are doing and allow them to collect more of our money, or we should insist on specific things that must change? What are the key issues here?
you read from a government document which was co-signed by officials in the Ministry of Finance and persons within the private sector who came together to say that, look, government, where you are going, we don't agree with it. It is possible to cut losses in key areas as to lessen the kind of impact or burden you want to impose on the citizenry. The minister was shocked to hear that coming from you, when in fact an officer within her ministry co-signed this particular document. Now the question you ask yourself is whether these documents, when they are produced, get shared with policymakers so that at that level they could take it to cabinet and say that, look, we have made our own assessment of the situation together with the private sector, and we take the view that it is possible to reduce some expenditures as to lessen how much burden we want to impose on the Ghanaian. We have consistently said in the studio that the kinds of losses we are seeing require some major cuts and sacrifices from the government. And when I started talking about it, Bernard was saying that, look, you go and do the research and produce the report. Then I would accept that these are the losses that need to be we are looking at that need to be cut. Now the report is out there, and it would seem that the people in government are not even reading the document, because if they were reading it, perhaps either they would know about the content or they would do something about them. And you see, this is where the role of parliament comes in. Because you cannot continue to hand the keys of an oil store to Adadi. Alo avu. Because you don't send a dog to the market where oil is sold, because the dog will go and lick everything there. Mm-hmm. So if the government has proved that it is not responsible in protecting the public purse, yeah, and there are so many examples to cite, it is the job of parliament to insist that, look, yeah, we are not going to approve a penny more if you have not shown that this is how you use the money. COVID financing. We have seen a report, although yet to be considered by parliament, that is damning on so many levels. When the president went to parliament to address the nation on the state of affairs in our country, he basically whitewashed the institutions that have been indicted by the authority given to the auditor general.
Which means that had it not been a prior action for the IMF, they wouldn't have even done it.
Exactly. So why would you ask the auditor general to look at a our expenses?
Yeah.
Come up with a report. The report is yet to be considered by parliament.
Maybe he's the auditor in chief.
And then you go and sort of clear them for.
Is the auditor in chief? But why is your commander in chief?
You should show a certain level of, you know, concern, commitment to protecting the public best.
I wanted to prove a point to you, just I made to the minister. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I said to her that the committee, the essentials people, and they had recommended that we should even maintain 2022 level of CAPEX,
mm-hmm,
instead of increasing it,
mm-hmm,
right? Now, CAPEX figure for 2022 was 15.7 billion.
Ghana Cedis.
Yes. For this year, they've increased it to 27.7 billion. So you're increasing CAPEX by 12 billion cedis. So if you are, and he's saying, well, CAPEX is roads and things. My question is, you are saying you are in dire streets. These are not ordinary times. Why are you almost doubling your CAPEX?
But you see,
do you get me? Why are you doubling your CAPEX? So it's almost like we will do what we want to do and we'll take, as I said, my money has been taken. They've given me a haircut.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a mark to market loss.
That is in the one.
And they haven't even added my.
what you're losing, yeah, inflation and all these things we
raise
your capital.
You are raising. Sky, you see, maybe one day I should do a show where we put all the expenditure for last year and compare it to the expenditure for this year and ask ourselves whether this is really the type of expenditure that somebody who says is going through problems should be. Do you get me? Because the list, the items are there. But it's just two pages. If you take all the revenue and expenditure for 2022, you are raising CAPEX by 12 billion cedis.
Yeah. When you say you are facing economic.
So what? I'm not saying CAPEX is a bad thing.
You know, Bernard.
Like, have you maintained your CAPEX and say, oh, we for the next 2 years. But it's why? Because politics, roads, elections.
So no, the capex road, no money vote. Goes into the construction of roads, those things.
Yes. But Nate, I'm saying that if you are doubling, it's a country that is going through dire straits, the one that should be doubling almost, because 15.7, what's the figure? Let me give you the 2022 figure. The 2022 figure, Q1 to Q4, is 15,724,000,000, which domestically financed is 4 billion, foreign finance is 11 billion. Mm-hmm. So that's 15 billion, right? Mm-hmm. So your capex, probably 60% of it is foreign financed, okay? Now, 2023, which is the year that we are talking about, your capex has increased to 27 billion. Okay, and what's the breakdown for the 27 billion? 11 billion domestic, 16 billion foreign. And where is government getting money from? Again, let's explain. So government gets money from taxes. They say they want to raise 4 billion from this. Government used to borrow a lot. Mm-hmm. Indeed, this government has borrowed 3 times what the previous government borrowed, and 12 times what Kufo borrowed. Mm-hmm. Right? These are facts. So this government was borrowing a lot of it non-concessionary. Concessionary are loans you get from your friends. So they are cheaper loans. Mm-hmm. A lot of our loans became non-concessionary, so more expensive loans. Mm-hmm. You've been closed out of the international bond market, so you can't borrow from there again.
Because we're not credit worthy.
So government, what is government doing? Government did a debt exchange to say that the people we owe domestically, we will reduce the amount that we will pay you and the interest we promised you. Mm-hmm. And the time we will pay you, extend the time. Mm-hmm. So they save about 7 billion from that. Mm-hmm. So you and I, our money that we give to government, 7 billion of it, they've taken it. Mm-hmm. Now, the other place, and while they are doing that, they are still borrowing because they've now increased treasury bills by a lot. So even though they sell bonds to us and we buy, and they are saying they can't pay the 19% and they are reducing the 19 to 14 and 15, they are selling T-bills to you at 35% and you are still buying it.
Yeah, they're actually reducing.
So they are raising short-term funds using that. So indeed, government's only revenue source, apart from regular taxes, is the treasury bills that it's selling. And there's the new taxes that it's trying to raise. And of course, what you will call concessionary bilateral loans from friends. Mm-hmm. So we do understand that the budget is not sustainable. But my point about parliament is that maybe the parliamentarians too, they feel like if they go and reject this budget, they will be seen to be sabotaging the country. So that the because Kai, the IMF program has not come, the 3 billion is not coming. Uh-huh. If you read what Elvis Darko wrote today in the Finder, he's saying that if the 4 billion doesn't come, in fact, let me read the direct paragraph for you. He said that if the 4 billion doesn't come, good. He cautioned that if the bills are not passed, government will be forced to review revenue estimates, which will have serious consequences on public funds. The Director of Revenue Policy Division of Ministry of Finance explained that the government has indicated revenue mobilization plans to IMF, which includes the outstanding bills. He therefore said failure to pass the bills will exacerbate an already difficult financial position of the country. He pointed out that the country is in extraordinary times and appealed to the members of parliament to pass the outstanding bills. Mr. Winfo pledged the Ministry of Finance to deepen stakeholder engagement to address public concern. So let the people and companies pay more.
You see,
so that the country doesn't collapse.
You see, that's the problem. When you go to the people and you're asking them to pay more, you must demonstrate that what had been given to you previously, you used it properly. And on everything that we have said thus far, it seems to everyone, and it is clear, that this government has not been the best managers of the public press. In fact, the president told us when he came to power that he was going to be an exceptional manager, the best protector of the public purse. But look at where we are. And the point I'm making is that parliament are the guys, the people who can allow further charges to be made on us or who can stop it. If they do not say no, the government will keep coming back. The minority has consistently called for cuts in the size of government. They have called for cuts to happen at the presidency. All the hangers on at the presidency, people who are going there getting all manner.
The German ambassador even said it recently, yes, that we should cut our
expenses. But it is not happening.
He said, you can't come to me and ask me to give you concessionary debt forgiveness if you are not cutting size of government. He said it free.
So if it is not happening, Why is it that Parliament will sit again in their right minds, will say that, okay, we are allowing the government to make further charges on the poor people of this country? And what is most annoying is that they are tasking, or they are taxing, the very people who are the engines of growth in our country. If you impose these new burdens on the small industries that we have, the small businesses that we have,
shipping lines, so if you look at the categories, they are, you are right, a lot of them are in the productive sectors of the economy. So you have shipping lines, maritime and airport terminals, electronic money issuers, specialized deposit institutions, SEC regulated companies, upstream petroleum, communication tower operators, OMCs, BDCs, companies providing mining support, inspection and evaluation companies, breweries, telcos liable to collect and pay, CST, insurance companies, non-bank financial institutions and banks. They are paying the five. Then the rest of us, which means everybody,
everybody,
cement manufacturers, block, everybody, 2.5. Let's take a short break, Sky. I know that this has tilted the discussion away from the social media point, but
there's even some message I have to reach
on that. But let me come to Nathan to do a few quick announcements for me before we come back to what is left of the economy.
All of these things, at least what you can do for yourself is buy yourself some fan yogo, fan choco, fan ice.
And you can eat it with meat pie.
Yeah, I tell you. Fan milk PLC, like they've been doing this for over 60 years, and they are still giving us great, delicious, and nutritious products. So go ahead and enjoy your favorite fan yogo, strawberry, fan choco, and fan ice. Coco. At 3 CDs for the 145 ml pouch and 2 CDs for the 100 ml pouch. So that's what they are saying.
You can get it, it always go with pie though. I mean, the boys who pull the thing, they always sell it with pie.
That's the combo.
But we want meat pie, not air pie.
You can call Farm Milk on 030-700-0595. Now, grabbing your favorite drink for all your different occasions can be tricky sometimes. No need to stress. Your favorite Coca-Cola has you covered. Now, the 300 ml Coke Classic is now 5 CDs. 300 ml Coke Zero, Fanta, and Sprite is 4 CDs. If you want it in larger quantities, then the 1.5 liter Coke Classic is 20 CDs. And the same sized 1.5 liter Coke Zero, Fanta, and Sprite is selling at 18 CDs to share with family and friends. Real ice cold refreshment with your friends and family. Now, Indomie's put out the latest addition, Indomie Beef, and it's the same great taste, and you can enjoy your Indomie.
It's called Indomie Tolo Beefy.
I tell you what, Charlie. If you want a quick meal with a pleasing flavor, do your taste buds a favor with the new Indomie Beef flavor. Indomie tastes great. And the British Council says that they are giving you an opportunity to impact the world around you. Those who study abroad in countries like the UK are getting much more than just a degree. They are getting a world of valuable experiences, as we can see, which is Sky here and your good self. Visit the British Council website to find out how you can own your future.
ECG is announcing that revenue mobilization, 20th March to 20th April. This will focus on SOEs, all categories of customers in areas, including SOEs, monitored by special teams who will apprehend and prosecute customers who attempt to interfere with the exercise or undertake illegal
connection.
Now, pursuant to this exercise, ECG will operate with a lean staff pool who will provide essential services to customers during the revenue mobilization period to enable total participation. Now, all customer centers, however, will be open to serve the public. Now, recalcitrant customers who have refused to redeem their indebtedness to the company after they have been served with final demand notice will be arraigned before the court of law. Management wishes to advise all customers in arrears to pay their bills now to avoid disconnection. Empower yourself with a practical qualification in corporate finance, financial markets, and investment management, including practical application in financial modeling. CFA is a globally recognized standard for measuring the expertise, experience, and ethics of investment professionals. CFA Level 1 eligibility has been extended to university students with less than 2 years remaining on the undergraduate programs. So if you're an university student, Level 300, you could now be eligible for CFA. So, and you can get support from Benchmark to get this done. So go to benchmarkghana.com or call 0249-944-442. That's 0249-944-442 to get on the CFA ladder. Vodafone Business presents Too Much Business. It's the number one mobile plan for businesses in Ghana today. With Vodafone Too Much Business, you have the best mobile plan on the market. Gives your business the best value, meaning you have the flexibility to choose voice, data, SMS that suits your business's size and ambitions. Now you can call 0507-779-000 or email vodafonebusiness.gh@vodafone.com to get onto Vodafone Too Much Business. And Standard Water has over 25 years of experience in providing quality and refreshing water to quench your thirst. The brand is in 11 regions already. We are expanding to cover the rest of the country. We're giving you a Star Sachet water, bottled water, dispenser, mounted jar, and other water for your customized events. For bulk purchase, call 020-2055703. That's 020-2055703. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Unleashing the power of relevant radio. This is City 97.3.
Some of from my wife, Joyce.
Hey, babe, what means it?
Four minutes past nine, we'll be getting into our Heritage Month on SCB shortly. Here are a few quick comments on the...
Okay, so there's this one I want to read from Sam George. It's in connection with the very first topic that we're discussing just before, before we go to... So it says, most of the online platforms have been mandated to have child policies to protect children. For example, the major platform Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp have policies mandated by the EU and the GDPR. So Instagram has developed analytics that show you how much time per day you are spending on the platform. Now, the issue is users being able to use these analytics to ensure control. Now, the issue of TikTok, when you set up the app, you determine what you see on your feed. Mm-hmm. Most people select funny videos and all kinds of unproductive content. Mm-hmm. In countries like India, Singapore, and even China, where the app was developed, children of a certain age are largely restricted to educational content on the platform. So in Ghana, TikTok is a fan content platform, whilst in other countries it is actually a learning platform. And finally, on the issue of policy, Ghana is too small to demand community standards that are unique and peculiar to our nuances. We, however, could be the champion of an Africa-wide policy like the EU has the GDPR. This is because Meta, for example, has earnings that are 100 times our GDP. And so we can also do via leading conversation on the African framework.
All right, thank you. More comments on this and other matters.
Okay, this one says, Bernard, it makes no sense to deliberately suffocate your citizens and milking them of their hard-earned fortunes when duty bearers have failed woefully in giving employment to your citizens. The citizenry are not going to pay much more tax. With the lack of culture of accountability, because duty bearers serve their parochial interests and their cronies, is why we are where we are. How much has the country lost to the wind? Which unaccounted for is the code word. This one says that the woman only spoke good English. Not much. You want me to burden share with the government when you are still driving a huge convoy? It's coming in from Patrick in Togoma. This one from TKK in Asylum Down says that if indeed we are the ones to solve our own issues, Honorable Ose Asare, what are we doing with the IMF? Bernard, you are pouring water on stone. This government is not one that will listen to anyone. This is the most painful interview I have listened to on your program. The deputy minister is a true representation of the government. She's just talking and not listening. It's coming in from Nene Ayiku. This one from TJ in Belgium says, that, good morning, City. This government is heartless. Why do they keep telling Ghanaians to cut? But yet the government keeps increasing its size. This one says, whose fault is it that we are here? It is not the misappropriation of the fiscal. Is it not? Yeah, the misappropriation of the fiscal. That's what has brought us here. Why now come to the innocent, vulnerable people asking them to pay more? We pay all our taxes to you, government, to use it. And then you go borrowing, knowing very well your revenues and income streams are not in existence. We, the people, say, okay, let's all take the cost and share. First, cut your overhead costs on government spending. You say no, but we should rather pay more taxes to you. Bernard, I'm tired.
Oh, Lord.
Then finally, Confi in Ada says that this government, the least said about them, the better, because they are still blaming COVID and Russia for their shambolic performance in government. No comments. No, but you see,
the thing that fascinates you. So somebody was telling a joke the other time. It was a joke I read. Somebody was like, the Ukraine really needs to pay attention to its next door neighbor, Ghana. Because the way their issues with Russia are affecting their next door neighbor. No? It's too much.
No, you see, let's admit that indeed.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Oh, of course.
They are affecting us.
No, but the guy's point was like, is that the thing hit we pass? Like we are next door to Ukraine. Like we can, you can drive from Ghana to Ukraine.
People have not been charitable on Twitter.
There's a lot of anger
people
from the interview.
So angry,
for vex.
And you know,
people are very angry.
And a good friend. So it is difficult to see some of the things that people are saying.
Charlie, the system is tough.
You know, like
you should give
people
us
are not
answers
happy.
That will address the issues, but it looks like the government doesn't have the answers. So the money you pay.
But today, I think for me, the interesting observation from this, like I was telling you guys previously, is outside of the one, this, you know, like we had tried to discuss this a bit earlier, just for our listeners, since last week.
We're not even getting access.
We're not getting access to the documents.
Until today. You
know, until, yeah, today.
Even that cry, we just have excess of it.
Yes.
I have the stabilization one.
Yes, you know, so it was quite difficult even getting all of this. And we also haven't heard too much from others on this. So today, for instance, I will be paying close attention to the discussion around this in Parliament.
Yeah.
Because normally you would hear from the finance
the
side of
the NDC people will shout and they'll pass it. They'll shout, when it please, they'll pass it with their voice vote.
No, I'm just saying, I want to hear what they say.
They will do grandstanding.
Hey, they're passing it to pass.
But you want to hear the.
But I want to hear what the arguments are. I'm very interested in hearing what the arguments are. But they will pass it.
Sky knows, they'll pass it. They'll shout a lot. But they'll finish and pass it.
You know, Bernard, you know what's happening is that for some reason, the minority, sometimes they push and then also look back and say, well, I mean,
if you have an economy that is in serious crisis like the way we do, and you don't take these measures, the whole thing collapses on everyone, and then everybody suffers. So they look into it and say, okay, let's adopt a more practical approach. But I see, I think there's a time for us to now actually ask government the hard questions, because we cannot continue on this path. So yes, I mean, as you said, the minority will be raising their issues, but it does seem that no matter what they say, ultimately this will be passed, because in any case it requires just a simple majority to get it through, and it could even be determined on the basis of a voice vote, unless they decide to say that, Mr. Speaker, we want to call for division so that we know exactly who is voting for and who is not voting for and what the numbers are saying. So if you look at it, it's certain that it will go through.
It'll go through.
But I don't know whether the vote will be taken today, because I don't know what stage the documents
it's are. In. We'll check. But the finder's report was that MPs will cast a vital vote today. We can cross-check with Parliament.
Anyway, on the downside of life, losing a loved one stops you in your tracks and leaves you shaking. In those times, you can count on the Lashibi Funeral Home and Crematorium. They've been doing this for 21 years and they are going to give you experienced private end-to-end funeral services. You can call them on 0509-542-409 or send an email info@lashibifuneralhomes.com. Visit their website, lashibifuneralhomes.com, for more info. Lashibi Funeral Homes and Crematorium, dignity for the deceased, comfort for the bereaved. Now, the British Council is telling you to imagine, you know, that you had the power to impact the world around you. And at the British Council, they see students from all over the world with dreams of a bright future coming together for a quality education that achieves goals. Those who study abroad in countries like the UK are getting much more than just a degree. They are getting a world of valuable experiences. Visit the British Council website to find out how you can use, or how you can own, sorry, your future.
All right, when we come back, the Heritage Marathon series continues with the series we started. The history of the formation of the Ghana Armed Forces. Samalata Mensah has been doing that discussing. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
And this is still the story of the Ghana Armed Forces. What actually gave birth to the activities that gave birth to the Ghana Armed Forces? And as you can hear from him, they are a series of interconnected events over decades and centuries that gave birth into what started and then grew to what we see today. At this point, what kind of military structure did we have as a country?
Thank you very much. In 1868, the British met the Dutch. Let me go back to 1850.
Mm-hmm.
By 1850, we have three Europeans, the Danes, the Dutch, and the British.
They were all here?
They were here.
Operating business. Yeah.
In the Gold Coast at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the Danes decided that trade was not too profitable. And Denmark abolished slave trade in 1793. So, and the gold was not flowing like at first. The Ashantis were sending everything to the Dutch at Elmina. So they sold their forts and castles to the British in 1850 and left.
In 1850? 50.
And Great Britain became, apart from the Dutch, was controlling the whole of the Gold Coast. But for the Dutch at Elmina.
But were they controlling the Ashantis as well?
No. Okay. I'm talking about the southern part of the Gold Coast. Then they met in 1868, the British and the Dutch, and decided that they were going to choose River Snowy.
River what?
Snowy.
Surowi.
Surowi.
Where is
after
that?
After Cape Coast Castle, you are going to Elimina.
Mm-hmm.
You
that,
see a stream.
Oh, that one.
You see a stream.
That joins the sea.
Where they built, what do I call it, sea defense.
Yeah.
They chose that stream. And instead of pronouncing Surowi, they were pronouncing it River Sweet.
River what?
Sweet.
Sweet.
You know, British are like Ashantis.
Yeah.
Ashantis cannot pronounce any name very well. Once the name is pronounced as the Ashanti name, the British are also like that.
They say I'm gonna go. I don't even understand this. You can correct them a thousand times.
No. So the British called it River Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided that all Dutch forts to the east of River Sweet should come under British administration, headquartered at Cape Coast Castle. And then all British forts to the west of River Sweet will come under the Dutch, headquartered at Elimina Castle.
Oh, still Elimina, okay.
Then the Fanti chiefs met and said that if it is so, it means Fanti country had been divided into two.
Yeah.
Because Fanti country, it goes up to the River Pra. So they started picking up fights. Commander people started fighting the Dutch. And then in 1872, the Dutch also sold their possession to the British and left the Gold Coast. So in 1872, the British became the sole owners of all the forts and castles in the Gold Coast. When this thing, you know, I told you already, Asantini had the note to Elimina Castle. So they say the Dutch, the British cannot buy Elimina Castle without a reference to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because by having the note, it means they are the owners
of the castle. Yeah.
So in 1872, they attacked. And Asantini Amankwetia told Nana Asantini Kofi Kakari that he will bring the walls of Cape Coast Castle to Kumasi. That battle should have gone to another general, but Amankwetia lobbied and was given to him. And he became so powerful that he constructed his own road from Masinfosu to Abakrampa.
Mm-hmm.
And they carry him in a palanquin.
Mm-hmm.
On the way from Masinfosu to Cape Coast.
Mm-hmm. They carried him from
in a palanquin from Masinfosu to Cape Coast.
Oh, yeah.
You can imagine how powerful Amankwetia was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But he tried so many times. He couldn't breach the walls of Cape Coast Castle.
Why?
The cannons were at work.
Oh, okay.
And the Cape Coasters were on the side of the British.
Okay. So they were fighting them.
Fighting.
Mm-hmm.
They defeated the Ashantis.
All right.
And because of this, the British government decided that let us punish Asante once and for all. So the best of all the British generals, Sir Garnet Wolseley, was sent to the Gold Coast. He came with 12,000 men.
What?
From UK, West Indies, and some from Sierra Leone and other nations. All of them came here. They came and they added to the militias existing on the ground. And he brought Lagos Constabulary troops from Nigeria.
From Nigeria?
Mm-hmm. In 1865, here was a British captain coming down with Clapperton and Denham on the Niger.
With what?
Clapperton.
Uh-huh.
That was a white man's name. And okay. Then Denham. And they had a shipwreck on the River Niger. So he bought a horse and started moving down towards the coast. At that time, there were so many wars in Yoruba land, and so many people had been taken as slaves.
Yeah.
So he bought the slaves, armed them, clothed them, and then fed them. They are the Glover Houses or Lagos Constabulary that I'm talking about.
Mm.
So they also came down to the Gold Coast. And in November 1873, they set off to Kumasi. He came with engineers. He came with signalers that as they were moving, they were constructing road laying telegraph lines.
Wow.
From Cape Coast Castle.
For communication.
For communication. So he crossed the Pra when the river was at low tide, just like how it is today. Okay. They crossed, and the first engagement with the Ashantis was at Amuafu near Asante Bekwai. Ashantis were pushed back, defeated. And then Menchia was ransacked. Mm-hmm. Then he retreated from there to Formina, Adansa Formina. And then another batch of the troops, they went through Axim. And then when they reached the parallel of Kumasi, mm-hmm. they moved eastwards.
Eastwards, yeah.
And then they also came in and added more casualties to the Ashantis. Then the Grover houses, uh-huh. they operated along the Volta River.
Oy.
When they reached the parallel of Kumasi, they too moved west. Mm-hmm. And they too came and did their own thing. So the Ashantis were forced to come and sign the Treaty of Formina 1874. Mm-hmm. And they agreed to pay 50,000 ounces of gold. Mm-hmm. And that Ashanti will not go to war without informing the British. And that slave trade should be abolished. Slavery cannot go on. And then Panyarin, let's say I'm owing you money. I send my child to come and stay with you.
Yeah.
That one too was
also that was also abolished. Because we had some pawn slaves in the process.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And then all the tributaries that are under Asante were to be including Achim, Ekwapim, Techiman, uh-huh. part of Accra, Denchira.
Which part of Accra would this be?
Part of Accra.
Yeah.
Were under the Ashantis.
Like and then, where? Do you remember like where?
What do I call it? Jamestown, Labadi areas. They all had their independence from Ashanti 1873 campaign, Ghana to Osele.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Including the Waspasa were also liberated. Mm-hmm. The Asin and Adansi were also liberated. But the Adansis, they decided that they were then part of the Asante kingdom. As I said earlier, after Asante 1873 campaign, also known as Sagrenti War.
Sagrenti.
Because Ashantis couldn't pronounce Ghanet Wolseley.
Jesus.
Because of that, they pronounce it Sagrenti.
So the Sagrenti is actually Ghanet Wolseley. Thank you, Ashantis. So that was the Sagrenti War.
Mm-hmm. After the Sagrenti War, in February 1874, mm-hmm. I told you it started from November 1873.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their earlier episode at Prasso, they chose the dry season to attack Ashanti. And after that, the southern part made up of present-day western and western north regions.
Mm-hmm.
Present-day central region, present-day eastern and greater Accra regions, and then the southern part of Volta regions, mm-hmm. from the coast to 130 kilometers inland, all became
part of the Gold Coast colony. Wow.
This is the birth of the Gold Coast colony.
Mm-hmm.
It was created after the Sagrenti War.
Okay. By the British. So at this point, it was still without the participation of the Ashantis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The Ashanti was a Ashanti Confederacy.
Okay.
But we have Gold Coast Colony
mm-hmm.
under the British.
All right.
Then I told you about the Lagos Constabulary who took part
in the
1873 campaign. Mm-hmm. In military, we call it Asante 1873.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the civil war, they call it Sagrenti War.
All right.
Uh-huh. So after the 1873 campaign, the Nigerians who came down with Grover to come and fight, they said the Gold Coast was too good for them. Here, there were not major wars like the Yoruba people, their wars. So they decided not to go back to Nigeria. So some books say 350, others say 300 were left behind. In 1879, they were used to form the nucleus of a force called the Gold Coast Constabulary.
That's the Lagos Constabulary.
No, the Lagos Constabulary who came and fight.
Uh-huh.
If you finish fighting, you have to go back home like the way the British and the West Indians and the Sierra Leoneans
went
to.
Back, yeah.
But they said they won't go back again.
Okay.
They prefer staying here.
Hmm?
So about 300 of them, some books say 350, were left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1879, they were still not having trust of the Ashanti people. So they decided to reorganize the militia, and they added these people to it.
Okay.
And it was named the Gold Coast Constabulary.
Right.
Because at that time, Gold Coast Colony had been created. And they were to perform military duties. Just as the British believed, in 1889, Ashanti attacked Nkuranza. And this made the British to march to Kumasi in 1896 and demanded that the Ashanti nation pay the war indemnity of the 1873 campaign. Ashanti couldn't pay. And
Could
not pay.
Okay.
He removed even his sandals to tell them that the amount of money they were demanding, Ashanti hasn't got it. So he was captured.
Which chief was this?
Ashanti Ajima Prempe the First.
Okay.
Also known as Kwekudia the Third.
All right.
He was captured and sent to Cape Coast Castle. From there to Elimina Castle, then to St. Helena's Island, Sierra Leone, before he was transported to Seychelles Island. And the British constructed governor's accommodation in Ashanti because it wasn't part of the Gold Coast Colony by then. So there was a resident governor in Kumasi overseeing all Ashanti activities and reporting back to the governor at the coast.
After they captured Nana Kwekudia.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They built a fort.
Mm-hmm.
And that fort is what is now being used, being called Armed Forces Museum in Kumasi.
Okay. Okay. This is near the ministries.
Yes.
Yes.
Close to
Kingsway. Up the hill from KME. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's part of Edum.
Yeah, it is part of Edum.
Mm-hmm.
So that was governor's accommodation.
Oh, so that was a governor's accommodation,
mm-hmm.
which is now being turned into the military.
And so
that's
we have
been very well preserved.
A sub-governor staying there.
So is that why you have all those cannon things there?
There were some of the cannons used by the British.
Okay.
In the 1900s.
Funny enough, there used to be something in front of Kingsway, you know, in the middle of the street.
Uh-huh.
You know the street that leads into the military.
Okay.
The back gate of the military.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be something when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story that used to say that they packed the fantis inside and locked it. And then if the fantis man wants to go and pee,
When I attended school at B, the Ashantis were always laughing at us. Sometimes they will see you and call you, hey, Major Tuman Tumbom. So I ask them, the Fantis and the Ashantis, who first saw gun and then gunpowder? Who saw it first?
Oh, so that story had some...
It wasn't the truth.
A creation of, you know, not until... It used to be a story that was buried up until in, I think, 1972-73, about Colonel Bedu from Cape Coast.
From Esikuma.
Esikuma, yes. Mm-hmm. Became the Ashanti
Regional Commissioner.
Yeah. That's correct. Okay.
Mm. So, the construction of the fort in Kumasi, Ashanti didn't like it.
Oh, they didn't like it?
Uh-huh, because you carried Pemper away.
And then you want to become our king or what?
Our king. So in 1900, governor of the Gold Coast, Sir Frederick Hudson,
Frederick
Hodgson.
Hodgson, yeah.
Went to Kumasi.
Mm-hmm.
And at a debate with the Ashanti chiefs, told them they should bring the golden stool for him to sit on.
Ah.
That he was the queen's representative.
They should bring his stool.
So Ashantis have been defeated. So in the 1873 campaign, So they should bring the suit for me, for him to sit on.
Okay.
And also demanded the war indemnity of the 1873 campaign. And also told them that age-long practice of human sacrifice, slave trade, slavery, pioneering, and those things, and they shouldn't exact tribute from any tributary state. He mentioned them once again. In the night, Ashantis got angry, barricaded all roads in and out of Kumasi. So the governor was holed up in the fort. And here we're having some Gokos regiment troops at Gambaga and Kintampo. And Major Maurice. They were brought in, they broke through the Ashanti barricade, entered the Destin. And then with some other troops in the night, escaped back to Accra. You know that in 1877, the capital was moved from Cape Coast to Accra. So this was the situation when a telegram was sent to London. So
a telegram was sent
from Accra to London.
Okay. So for those of you who are watching, telegram is like WhatsApp message. Don't worry.
At that time, when post office was there.
Yeah.
And if you can call somebody on telephone, you have to go to post office.
Of course.
So you can send a telegram message. Then they will say, let's say to Kofi Mensah, mother seriously sick.
Sick.
Proceed immediately. That is all.
Few words,
that's all. Because if your words are longer, your words are more, you will pay more.
Yes.
So, as we are speaking, we go back to 1897. The Admiralty, the War Office, the British Foreign Office, and then Indian Office met, and the Committee of Imperial Defense was told to organize troops in all British colonies to support the British Navy, the Royal Navy, in case of any future war. So in northern Nigeria, 1 and 2 battalions were formed. And then in southern Nigeria, to southwest, Lagos. Lagos Constabulary now became Lagos Battalion. And then in southern Nigeria, the Southern Nigeria Regiment, southeastern Nigeria, another regiment was formed there. And as I told you earlier, we had the Gold Coast Constabulary in the Gold Coast also. And I told you some of the constabulary troops came from
Nigeria.
From Nigeria.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
City 97.3 Accra.
Welcome back. And that was our heritage series conversation for the morning. And that's how we wrap it up on this morning's edition of the City Breakfast Show. Earlier, you heard Bernard Avle, Richard Delasky, Godfred Akotubuafo, and myself, Nathan Kwasho, produced by Fred Jabano, Caleb Kuda, Godfred Odum, supported us on technical.